clubs would use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome as an insult directed at people who were describing every aspect of the US president's character and performance with almost clinical accuracy. It's a good word, deranged, or derangement, because it clearly now describes the president. He is a deranged liar. Why do people who know that still struggle to admit it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Israel's defence minister says two top Iranian security officials have been killed in Tehran. It follows the latest round of US-Israeli bombardments overnight. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has the latest.
If the claims by Israel's defense minister are correct, then two more key figures within the Iranian regime have been killed in the latest overnight attacks on Tehran. Ali Larijani was the country's top security official. Just 3 weeks ago, he was in Geneva leading Iran's delegation in talks with the United States. Also assassinated, Gholam Reza Soleimani, the commander of Iran's besieged militia, accused by many Iranians of the brutal repression of demonstrators in the country earlier this year.
A government minister has played down tensions with the United States after President Trump renewed his criticism over the Iran war. Donald Trump wants allies to help unblock the Strait of Hormuz, a key route for transporting oil. Mr. Trump says he once saw the UK as the Rolls-Royce of allies, but is disappointed by the reluctance to get more involved. Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson told LBC this morning the latest remarks shouldn't be a cause for concern.
From time to time, presidents and prime ministers will come to different judgments. I'm really confident that the Prime Minister has taken the right decision when it comes to not having us trying to engage with what I think at one point was termed regime change from the sky in Iran. Yes, you know, we don't support the Iranian regime, but we do want to make sure that we are protecting British national interests.
It's been confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent where two people have died. Thousands of people are being tracked down for preventative antibiotics linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. Anyone who went to Club Chemistry on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March have been told to contact health officials. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet with Keir Starmer in Downing Street as Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal. Number 10 says it'll bring together expertise to manufacture and supply drones. And the Chancellor is to announce £2.5 billion of funding for artificial intelligence and quantum computing. Rachel Reeves will use a speech in London this morning to say she's committed to the UK having the fastest adoption of AI in the G7. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 49 at 10,366. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales later, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. The breaking news, as you just heard in your news bulletin, is that the Secretary of Iran's intelligence services, their key security chief, has, according to reports from Israel, been removed from the map, been killed in this probably illegal war. He was also Iran's chief nuclear negotiator between 2005 and 2007. More on that as and when it emerges. But we find ourselves once again contemplating... what do you do if there's only one story in town? It's happened a surprising amount of times in the last few years. You're probably going to correct me on this, but prior to 2016, I don't remember it happening at all. Every day there would be two or three things vying for our attention at an absolute minimum. But during COVID, certainly, and during Brexit, you just felt that it would be inappropriate to talk about anything else. This is just me, by the way. It's not in any way a criticism, veiled or otherwise, of other people. Criticisms would involve talking about absolute rubbish to avoid acknowledging how wrong you were about the big stuff going on in the world. Criticisms there galore, either veiled or unveiled, whatever you prefer. But you can't have a news bulletin, for example, that's only got one story in it, can you? It would be weird. Except when there is something like COVID in its very early days, or indeed a war in its very early days. Look at Ukraine. Look at Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to Keir Starmer today, and argue, if you dare, with the observation that public interest wanes. It waxes and it wanes, and the news both reflects and creates that process. I don't know. I find it fascinating. I know you may not, because I do it for a living, and you don't. Most of you don't. I did receive a message earlier today from one of my favourite broadcasters asking for advice on where he can get a mug like mine. I might leave you to guess who that was, because I haven't checked whether or not they'd be comfortable with having their privacy stripped away. But if you don't do it for a living, maybe it isn't as fascinating to you as it is to me. Do you know why it's so important and so interesting? Listen, and this is unlikely, frankly, because it would render you somebody who's probably not intellectually qualified to listen to this programme. But if you feel yourself groaning when I point out the four donkeys of the Cropopolips and their relevance to everything that's going on today, you're missing a huge point. We would not now be facing what we're facing with Donald Trump if our political and media establishment had correctly reported and responded to the triple disasters of Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. The quadruple disasters, in fact, of austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. If you're creating an ecosystem in which the truth doesn't matter, and the deranged, and more on that word in a moment, in which the deranged can prevail, in which a deranged liar can rule. Now, we probably wouldn't have been able to affect the American election result, but we certainly wouldn't be looking at newspapers in this country that have chosen to report the deranged liar's latest insults and latest obnoxious attacks upon our dignified and democratically elected Prime Minister. We certainly wouldn't be living in a country where organs like the Daily Mail feel compelled to report it from Trump's perspective, or with Trump in the box seat, or with their head so far up Trump's backside that when he breaks wind, they whistle. I think it's all linked. If you want to understand how the truly terrible things happening now can have been permitted to happen, you can't just focus on the destination. You want to understand how you got to a destination, you've got to look at the steps on the road, the steps on the path to that place. This is, if anything, if I have anything close to a world view or a philosophy, this is it. It's the boiling the frog doctrine. It's the idea that none of us would have supported or even perhaps contemplated the likelihood of Z existing if it wasn't for the 25 previous letters. So they sold you A, and then they sold you B, and then they sold you C. And A was fairly mild, and B was just a tiny bit more bonkers, and C was relatively straightforward, and D was debatable, and E was not extraordinary, and F was flipping. You see what I mean? And then suddenly it's Z, and you're saying, oh yeah, we're having a discussion in the United Kingdom about whether we should send our forces to help a deranged liar dig himself out of a hole that he's dug for no reason other than, and then you insert whatever theory you prefer, whether it is Marco Rubio's contention that he is just dancing to Benjamin Netanyahu's tune, or whether he has taken complete leave of his senses, or whether he's been paid a huge sum of money to undertake this ludicrous war, or whether he did it because he thought that his approval ratings would bounce in the way that George W. Bush's did after the invasion of Iraq. You just pick your theory, and it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, because it's Z. We're at Z now. We're actually having debates in this country about whether the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is right or wrong not to jump into bed with a deranged liar and start bouncing about with abandon. That's question number one. Question number two, about whether or not we respond to attacks upon our allies, and question number three, whether or not we get involved in attempts to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, are, as I fear not enough people are pointing out, they're three completely different questions, and they all involve returning to the Chilcot checklist. And that is what Starmer is doing, returning to the Chilcot checklist, returning to international law, returning to the importance of a viable, a clear and viable plan at every different junction. So Starmer has no choice but to conduct himself as if Donald Trump were not a... Well, I don't know. Does he? Does he have a choice? Does he have a choice? And that's my question for you today. I'm going to play you some clips, but they are leading us towards this question. And this question is, why is it so hard for all of us? Because I've only relatively recently managed to do this. Why? There's two questions, and I think they're really interesting, but I'm going to need your help with them, all right? Why is it so hard for all of us, whether you have accepted it or not, it was still not easy to do. Why is it so hard for all of us to accept that Donald Trump is a deranged liar? Or at least that all of the evidence available suggests that he is a deranged liar. So more examples coming for you in a minute. 03456060973. And does it matter? Would anything be different if everything was being reported through that lens? So if you just had constant caveats on everything he says that said things like, of course, he is notoriously dishonest, or of course, he continues to contend that he won an election that he lost. Is it the fact that we don't have the professional vocabulary? And I'm thinking partly about the media and partly about you and your relationship with the media. We don't have the professional vocabulary to... what would the word be? To properly describe or articulate what is going on, because we can't go to that place where we accept that POTUS is a deranged liar. Let me give you some examples. And this is from yesterday. I thought that was important. I wasn't going to go back over the archive and go back over all of the clips that we've shared, all of the moments that we've shared together over the last year and a bit, because that would make my job too easy. I wanted to focus exclusively on yesterday, and I wanted to try and pin it down to half a dozen moments in a single press conference, or cronies and allies, his ridiculous colleagues in the regime, appearing on television and having to try to behave in a way that ignored the fact that their boss is not a deranged liar. I think, in terms of being a liar, I think that this is probably the best example. And remember, all of these clips are from yesterday and yesterday alone. Have a listen to this.
Other presidents should have done... I spoke to one of the former presidents who I actually like. Actually speak to some. I do like some people. It'd be shocking. And he said, I wish I did what you did. Could have done it. Other presidents, somebody should have done it. 47 years this went on. They call Iran the bully of the Middle East.
He hasn't spoken to any other presidents. Or at least, if he has, they are currently all denying it. And which president would it be? I think, to the best of my memory, only four who are currently alive. There is Barack Obama, who, because he's a racist, he keeps calling Barack Hussein Obama, because that word Hussein is designed, when he uses it, to provoke a negative reaction among people who don't like foreign. Bill Clinton, who he has made no secret of his hatred for. And then you have got the Bushes, right? You've got George W. Bush and his dad. Is that have I got that right? Have I missed one out? Jimmy Carter passed away relatively recently. So you've got two Bushes, a Clinton and an Obama. All of whom, when contacted by journalists or when letting journalists know via the usual channels, have denied completely that they approve of what Donald Trump is doing. George H.W. is dead. Who's the fourth then? Or is there only three? I'll get the article for you in a minute. But it's possible he was looking in a mirror. It's possible that he'd managed to contact George Washington via a Ouija board. I don't know. I mean, all of these things with Donald Trump. Biden, flipping Biden. Of course it's Biden. Flipping heck. What on earth are your qualifications to conduct a conversation like this, O'Brien? You can't even remember the last one. So Biden, Clinton, and George H.W. Bush, and Barack Obama. One of those men has reportedly told Donald Trump that he has his full support for the invasion of Iran and that they wish they'd done it themselves. I mean, here's part of the problem. And Mike, you know what's going to happen to my inbox now? It's going to be filled with the word Biden for the next 4 minutes, and then there'll be a pause, and then all the people who are listening on catch-up will start texting me the word Biden as well, as if I wouldn't have noticed my mistake as quickly as I have done and moved on. It wasn't just me, actually. Keith was silent. 14 minutes after 10 is the time. I mean, listen, that's part of the problem, because I say liar, right? And I feel uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable, partly because I've got legal training as a journalist, I suppose partly, and my subconscious, because Donald Trump sues people for $10 billion. He puts his little finger in the corner of his mouth. And, $10 billion I can only tell you that all four living presidents have let it be known that they're forgetting Joe Biden on Patrick's Day. All right, lads, give us a break. I'm sorry. All four have let it be known that it isn't them that he's been talking to. Hey, he could have made his own little effigy of a former president out of chewed up toilet paper and put little raisins in for eyes and I don't know, a little matchstick for a nose, and then said, "Hello, Mr. President, do you approve of my invasion of Iran?" And then done his own voice for the effigy president. He'd go, "Yes, Donald, you're the best. You're the greatest. I wish I had been more like you." And if he was doing that, seriously, in a closed room, if you found out, if footage emerged of Donald Trump having a conversation with a puppet that he'd made out of chewed up toilet paper, how shocked would you be? How shocked would you be? And that's the problem that we've all got. Because you wouldn't be that shocked. Yes, sir, you're the greatest president. Doobie doobie doo, I love you, Donald. I love you, Donald. I love your new marble. I love your new building. You're the greatest. You're the greatest. How shocked would you be? So, why do we find it? And this is a really interesting and, for me at least, important question. Why do we find it so hard? Is it because of the fear of what it would mean? Or is it something subtler than that, more sophisticated than that, less obvious than that? Why do we find it so hard still, after so long and with so much evidence, to call a spade a spade? To call, the word deranged, I'm a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm afraid I fail at this hurdle sometimes, I fall at this hurdle. Language that minimises or opens the door to the mockery of mental health issues. So, you know, madman. I'm not hypersensitive to this stuff, but if I genuinely believe that we're in danger of causing entirely unnecessary offence to wholly innocent and decent people, I like to be a little bit more cautious than perhaps I used to be. But deranged is okay, not least because, of course, all of the people who still get paid for their opinions, but who were using Trump derangement syndrome as an insult to direct at people accurately describing Trump and now accurately predicting the scale of the disasters that he would visit upon the world. That they introduced that word into this particular lexicon, so I'm comfortable using it. Why do we find it so hard? Why do we find it so hard to both accept and report that the President of the United States of America is a deranged liar? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And the second, slightly stranger question is, does it actually matter? So look at what Keir Starmer did with the state visit. He treated him as if he were not a deranged liar, right? And it went quite well for a couple of days. It looked like quite a good thing to do. And now it has been rendered an utterly pointless exercise because Donald Trump is being obnoxious and dishonest and vile towards Keir Starmer. So the only reason Starmer did that was to keep Trump sweet in relation to his attitude to the United Kingdom. But what did he do? He smacked us with tariffs. What did he do? He insulted our Prime Minister. What did he do? He made comments about our role in NATO that demonstrate either deliberate misleading or abject ignorance regarding NATO's role and what NATO is. And that's another phone-in for another day. Does he genuinely not understand this stuff, or does he pretend not to understand this stuff? But I think this might be one of those hours where the second question gets more interesting than the first question. So why do we find it so hard to do this? Why do journalists, for example, find it so hard? Because they can. I'm not sure that politicians can. I'm not sure that Keir Starmer or Mark Carney or Emmanuel Macron can actually stand up and describe the difficulties of dealing with a deranged maniac. But why can't the media tell the truth? Is it because we're frightened? And I'm seeing the media here partly as a vessel for public opinion. And I'm going to use myself as the lab rat. Why did I struggle until about 6 weeks ago to go all in on the idea that he is a deranged liar and there is no point expecting him to behave any differently or to discover decency or to finally become a statesman? He is a deranged liar. Is it a fear of what it tells us about humanity itself that makes us so reluctant to go there? If he's a deranged liar and he can be the democratically elected leader of the free world with his fingers on a nuclear capability that boggles the mind, what does it say about us? Not good enough just to say, well, it says nothing about me, it's all on the people that voted for him. We are of the same species, and we have put a deranged maniac in the most powerful position on the planet. We have done that. The human species has done that. They have looked at a liar. They have looked at a maniac. They have looked at a madman, and they have said, yeah, let's put him in charge. Is that why we're so frightened of pinning it down? Is that why we're so frightened of acknowledging it? Because we're frightened of what it says about us. And you can't get away with saying our fellow man, our fellow men and women, our fellow vote, because change the wind, change your education, change your upbringing, could have been you. Why are we so fearful and or reluctant to call Donald Trump a deranged liar? 0345 6060 973. And crucially, I've barely got started on the clips, by the way, the case for the prosecution, but if you want to interrupt me, you know what to do. Crucially, does it matter? Would it change anything if the bedrock of commentary and description were to go to this unprecedented place where it simply calls a spade and describes Donald Trump as the deranged liar that he so obviously is? Why does it feel so hard, even now, to do this when the evidence that it is correct is absolutely overwhelming? Go on, have a little think and give us a call on 0345 6060 973. If you hit the numbers now, you will get through, all right? You don't have to answer both questions, because I think that does it matter is probably a harder question to answer than why do we struggle with it so much? But we'll find out after this.
LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
You've arrived, your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
23 after 10. So more on the case for the prosecution. Have a listen to this. There's something obvious here, which is Trump's absolute unfitness for office. But there's something also quite extraordinary, given the context in which he has chosen to talk about Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. Check this out.
The President of the United States, Gavin Newsom, admitted that he has learning disabilities, dyslexia, everything about him is dumb.
Yeah, you heard that correctly. We're back to that little effigy made out of toilet paper that he's talking to in a private room off the Oval Office, because this is him in the Oval Office. Listen, for the avoidance of doubt, Gavin Newsom is the governor of California and Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America, right? And this happened yesterday.
The president of the United States, Gavin Newsom, admitted that he has learning disabilities, dyslexia, everything about him is dumb.
So that's deranged, right? Here's the classic lie.
Other presidents should have done. I spoke to one of the former presidents who I actually like. Actually, speak to some. I do like some people. Be shocking. And he said, "I wish I did what you did. Could have done it." Other presidents, somebody should have done it. 47 years this went on. They call Iran the bully of the Middle East.
So you have there an example of him being deranged and an example of him being a liar. Here's an example of him being both at the same time.
You know, if I didn't terminate Barack Hussein Obama's Iran nuclear deal, you would right now, well, Israel would be gone, it would be incinerated, and probably the Middle East likewise. And remember, they got all of those missiles. And I heard they were sending missiles to UAE. I said, that's strange. You know, UAE is like the banker for Iran. They're like the banker. Qatar, their neighbors, they got along okay. Saudi Arabia. All of a sudden, Kuwait is getting hit. Bahrain is getting hit. All these countries are getting hit. There was no expert that would say that was going to happen. It's not a question of like, gee, should you have known? And if we did know, big deal. I mean, we have to do what we have to do.
Deranged and lying there. Then we move on to, I think, mostly deranged. And this is, of course, what happens when deranged overshadows lying. This is him being deranged and you wishing, or at least hoping, that he's lying. So have a look at how well things are going in Iran and ask yourself what you'd do next.
I think Cuba, I don't know, in its own way, if it, you know, tourism and everything else, it's a beautiful island, great weather. They're not in a hurricane zone, which is nice for a change, you know. They won't be asking us for money for hurricanes every week. But I think Cuba's seen the end. You know, all my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. When will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now. They were for a long time. Very violent leaders.
Little echo there. I don't know if you picked up on it, on how he talks about women when he is owning up to sexually assaulting them for fun. You can do anything you want when you're famous. He's taken that attitude and now deployed it in the context of international relations. So we've got deranged, dishonest, deranged and dishonest, deranged. Here's disgusting.
Prime Minister of UK, United Kingdom, yesterday told me I'm meeting with my team to make a determination. I said, you don't need to meet it with the team. You're the prime minister. You can make your own. Why do you have to meet with your team to find out whether or not you're going to send some minesweepers to us or to send some boats? I said, you don't have to meet with your team. It's the same thing here. I can tell you that when this is over, oil prices are going to go down very, very rapidly. So is inflation. So is everything else.
I mean, off the top of my head, people you might want to consult before undertaking a war like that would include your military and your lawyers. But Trump doesn't get it. I don't know whether that goes under deranged, dishonest, disgusting, or all three. And this is what happens when you are called upon to defend him. This is what happens when, as a member of the regime, you are called upon to defend the indefensible. Listen to Rick Scott trying to do precisely that.
If the Strait of Hormuz doesn't open, how are oil prices in the United States going to come down?
Well, it'll open eventually. I mean, eventually it's going to open. But in the meantime, we need to do what we're doing. They cannot have a nuclear weapon. They cannot have ballistic missiles. Right?
How long do you think this is going to be closed?
How long is it going to take to make sure they don't have nuclear weapons? How long is it going to take to make sure they don't have ballistic missiles that can destroy Americans? They've been killing us for 47 years. This had to end at some point, and I don't want it on American soil. The president did the right thing. Do I want oil prices to come down? The first, I want them to come down badly just like everybody else, but I don't want to die, and I want people in this country to die of a nuclear weapon from Iran. They want to kill us. Let's be realistic here. The main goal here is destroy their ability to kill us.
Oh, desperate, actually. I suppose you go for the four Ds: deranged, dishonest, disgusting, and desperate. Donald Trump said in the previous clip that if Iran possessed nuclear weapons, they'd have used them. And then you've got Rick Scott popping up and claiming that, oh, we've got to carry on bombing them to make sure that they haven't got the nuclear weapons that Donald Trump told us they would have used if they had them. And then the final thing is horrible, because this involves a politician who wasn't in the room. This is Trump with Mike Johnson discussing a diagnosis, a secret and private diagnosis that a Florida Republican called Neil Dunn had received. And this speaks to, I mean, pure disgusting, actually. I thought when I opened the show this morning, we were just going to be jumping between deranged and dishonest, but of course, if we talk about the cronies, then you bring in desperate, because Mike Johnson has to sit there grinning like an imbecile throughout this hideous exchange. And disgusting doesn't come close to what he has just done to Neil Dunn and his family.
Congressman Neil Dunn of Florida had some real health challenges, and it was very serious, and had a pretty grim diagnosis. And I mentioned it to the president, and I said, Congressman Dunn is a real champion and a patriot because he's still coming to work. And if others got this diagnosis, they would be apt to go home and retire. And
what was the diagnosis?
It was, I think it was a terminal diagnosis.
He would be dead by June.
Okay, that wasn't public, but yeah, okay. It was grim. That's what I was going to say.
You hear the groan. He's boasting about the fact that this guy is continuing to shore up his majority, despite the fact that he is in receipt of a diagnosis that says he'll be dead by June, or was in receipt of a diagnosis that said he'd be dead by June. And listen, the groan, I'm going to play that again, because the groan speaks to what I'm speaking about today. This is what happens even in a room full of sycophants, right? This is what happens when your brain can't quite engage quickly enough to stop your mouth from authenticity. This is an incredible moment, because everybody in that room is a sycophant. And just in that nanosecond, they can't disguise their disgust at what he's doing. This is what happens when you haven't got the space all the time, and you only need a split second to bolt on your smile, to pretend everything's normal, to do what the president wants. Listen to this again, because this is what happens when all of these hideous masks of sycophancy slip.
Congressman Neil Dunn of Florida had some real health challenges, and it was very serious, and had a pretty grim diagnosis. And I mentioned it to the president, and I said, Congressman Dunn is a real champion and a patriot because he's still coming to work. And if others got this diagnosis, they would be apt to go home and retire.
What was the diagnosis?
It was, I think it was a terminal diagnosis.
He would be dead by June.
Okay, that wasn't public, but yeah, okay. It was grim. That's what I was going to say.
And the groan, that's people who are primed, programmed, and determined always to approve and to cheer everything the president does, even as they know he's lying. Just in that moment, they couldn't quite keep it together. They couldn't quite keep it in. So, when the evidence of his depravity and his derangement and his dishonesty is so absolutely clear, why do we all struggle to acknowledge it, articulate it, and report everything in the context of it? Hit the numbers now. You should get through. Be quick. 0345 6060 973. It's 10:33. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
Israeli officials claim their military has killed the Iranian security chief in a strike on Tehran overnight. Iran hasn't confirmed if Ali Larijani has been killed or injured, but we're expecting to hear an update shortly. The government has played down tensions with the US after President Trump criticised Sir Keir Starmer. Donald Trump wants the UK to help clear the Strait of Hormuz, but the Prime Minister says he will not be drawn into the wider conflict. The UK Health Security Agency has confirmed cases of meningitis Hepatitis B in Kent after two students died. Hundreds of people are being urged to come forward to get antibiotics to stop the spread of the infection. And the Ukrainian president is due to meet with Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street later. Number 10 says a new defence deal will mean Britain works with the country to manufacture and supply drones and other capabilities. LBC weather, a cloudy morning for most of the UK, but turning brighter this afternoon, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between. Sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton bike ride and keep us beating.
Amazing deals on package holidays. Pay now.
I've got tickets to that sold-out show. Message now.
Your subscription's been suspended. Update your payment details.
Final warning. To receive your package, pay the fee immediately.
Mum, I've had an accident. Please send money.
There's been suspicious activity on your bank account, and I need a few personal details.
Fraud is getting more sophisticated. Always stop, think, and check. Stay ahead of scams at gov.uk/stopthinkfraud.
The same band, the same chorus, different headphones. Discover hi-fi sound for yourself with the Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro and get £50 off with code 50buds4pro at curries.co.uk when you recycle any old tech by the 28th of April. Your sound, your way. 18 plus, £50 off Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro when you recycle any electrical item working or not working into a Curry's store.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It's 10:36 and literally off the top of my head, at least one of the moments from yesterday that we haven't played out to you is the one where he claimed that he predicted Osama bin Laden would blow up the World Trade Center in a book that he wrote. And I don't know where you start with the lies on that. He didn't, and he didn't write the book. It was like all his books. It was ghostwritten by somebody else, and it did not contain a prediction that Osama bin Laden would one day blow up the World Trade Center. His only real public statement regarding the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center was to lie about the fact that it had rendered one of his buildings now the tallest in Manhattan. On the day that it happened, people are jumping out of the windows of the World Trade Center to avoid burning to death. Donald Trump is on television boasting that because that building has come down, his is now the tallest in Manhattan, which was also a lie. So the question just gets bigger and bigger every minute. Why? Why do we, and I use we both loosely and advisedly, why do we still not describe him accurately as a disgusting, deranged liar? What is holding anybody back? Not everybody. My colleague Nick Abbott was way ahead of me on this, although his language, I think, is a little bit more diplomatic. Not always. And there are others on both sides of the Atlantic. But the establishment, the mainstream, still can't do it. The BBC political editor, Chris Mason, writes a piece today that is literally written as if Donald Trump is just another president. Just another president. Or the elephant in the room, Donald Trump has insulted Keir Starmer. I mean, why? Have we not yet reached a place where we can all say he is deranged, he is disgusting, he is dishonest, but we still have to deal with him? Emily's in Milan. Emily, thank goodness we can hear someone else's voice for a moment or two.
Hello.
Hello, Emily. What would you like to say?
I think it's so hard.
I know.
Because the powers of the U.S. presidency are extraordinary, and they're deadly serious. In a way that I don't think any of us want to confront or admit. And I was in Abu Dhabi when the attacks on Iran started.
Right.
And I never thought that I would be in a war zone in my life. But Iran reacted by sending missiles and drones to attack Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And I was there with my family, and we were getting missile alerts, and we were seeing them and hearing them being shot out of the sky. And my kids were scared. I was scared. So to know, to think that the person that is in charge of this is not sober and thoughtful is a horrifying thing to, that you have to face.
Oh.
In the very worst night of the attacks in, that I witnessed,
yes,
is when Trump posted something on his whatever knockoff Twitter, and it was so deranged and so insulting to the Iranians. And I just remember thinking, he's not going to have to deal with those consequences. We are, and the American troops are. And that was the worst night of the attacks. And my husband had to put a mattress up against the glass window because there were so many missiles being shot out of the sky that night.
And you can't rationalize it in ways that previous wars could be rationalized, even if they subsequently turned out to have been launched on dodgy information or launched on a lie, depending on your perspective. You could rationalize it because you, in that moment, you believed the people, or enough people believed the people, telling them the reasons why the war was happening. But that phrase, you've used two phrases there. I mean, first of all, you're a mistress of understatement for describing Donald Trump as not being sober and thoughtful. And that's an extraordinarily generous depiction of the man. But of course,
but that's what you want in a president.
Yeah, I know. But if they're sober and thoughtful here on a scale, then you need 47 new scales and to go to the bottom of all of them before you get to where Donald Trump sits. Because it's the fact that a crazy person is in charge of everything that actually compounds your terror in those moments. And is it a survival instinct to shut down that thought? Is that why we can't do it? Because the prospect is too terrifying. War is terrifying. War launched by a madman is terrifying squared.
Yes. And so what do you do in that situation except, like, hope and pray that somebody rational around him is going to intervene or give him advice that maybe he'll listen to, because that is the only way that we can get out of that situation.
But that ain't going to happen. That was first term Trump. Second term Trump, there is nobody in that role. Nobody in that position.
I know. But I don't think, yes, I agree with you. But I think that's the reason people don't want, I don't think people have realized the consequences of our vote until this war.
Really? You'd go that far? Had you?
I really would. Because, I mean, me.
No, but had you realized the consequences?
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. Of course. But I think it, in the U.S. right now, or at least before the election, it was just very much a war. It was this a war on wokeness and politically correct speak, and it was just a joke.
It was like trolling, internet trolling. It was like trolling on a huge scale.
Yeah, it was trolling and memes, and I think this has brought about, no, the presidency really is a serious position that needs to be occupied by somebody thoughtful and sober, and we can't just put somebody in there because we don't like wokeness or trans people or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think people took it seriously. And we're seeing this play out.
Well, a lot of people still don't, and of course never will. That's another nature of humanity, isn't it? In that we find it much, much harder to climb down from a position than we do to climb up. But the public support for the war is pitifully and historically low. What about the media? You will know more about the US media than I do. But I mean, that succession of clips that I just played there, they're all publicly available. They're all out there on the internet, and they were all broadcast live on television. So people are watching what we're watching, and they are not necessarily arriving at the same conclusions that everybody should. And a lot of the responsibility of that must lie with the professionals whose job it is to tell the truth, to publish and be damned.
Yeah, I think they try. I don't know. I think that the media right now is in a very sad state, especially in the U.S.
And it's getting worse because, of course, everything is owned by his allies, and the bits that aren't are on the chopping block, and the bits that still manage to maintain a relationship with the truth are facing threats of losing their licenses from the head of the FCC and getting killed by Donald Trump, talking about the death penalty being introduced for journalists who are treasonous. And by treasonous, he means telling the truth about what an almighty mess he's made of everything in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Would it change anything? Final question, and you don't have to answer it because I'm not sure I can. Would it actually change anything? Because remember that the media here, and presumably in the States as well, contains very, very, very stupid people who use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome. So you've always got the get-out clause if you are wrong about everything. And in this country, it would involve Brexit and Boris Johnson and Liz Truss and the rest of it. In America, it would probably involve the insurrection and the lies about the 2020 election. But even if, say, 30, 40, 50, 60% of the media started describing Trump accurately as deranged, dishonest, disgusting, depraved, would it actually change anything for ordinary people? Whether they agreed with the assessment or not, would it change anything?
I don't know.
No, I don't know either. You have to hope it has to matter, doesn't it, on some level? It has to matter that he's all the things that you've described him as, and yet I don't
know. But we live in separate realities.
Yeah, that's true. We live in separate realities. And I guess in some ways the question I'm asking is what can bring the two realities together? What, because you suggest, and I hope you're right, optimistically, that the war is going to change a lot of people's minds. It is going to bring the actual reality into sharper focus for people currently inhabiting Trump's alternative reality, which is, of course, full of alternative facts, as Kellyanne Conway warned us unintentionally in the very first term. But there it is. Thank you, Emily. And my sympathies, actually, what you describe is incredibly powerful. So imagine the trauma of shepherding, caring for your children while under fire. And then having that thought in the back of your mind that this is being done by a madman. This is being done by a madman. And that makes absolutely everything worse. It makes everything worse. But would it make anything better if everybody was describing him accurately? It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Petrol Retailers Association have got some explaining to do here. It isn't good enough to just say, oh, well, you don't understand how the petrol market works. You don't understand how our pricing works. We're operating at razor-thin margins. What people see is a war in the Middle East and the prices rise immediately at the pumps. And that's on oil that hasn't yet been purchased and is using oil that has already been bought and stored. And it doesn't make sense other than to think these retailers are ripping you off. And I think the government's right to point that out.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX.
Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I predicted Osama bin Laden would knock out the World Trade Center. I made that prediction a year before he did. I said, you better get him. He's a bad guy. I watched him be interviewed one time, and I said, that's a bad guy. You better get him. 1 year before, exactly, I wrote it in a book.
In the full clip, he can't even remember the name of the book, which is understandable because he didn't actually write it. But it's also a lie. It's a lie about a lie about a lie. And I don't know, is there a point where dishonesty becomes derangement? Where you're such a bad liar that you are mad? I don't know, but that's what we're examining today. Probably fruitlessly, but it's the question that interests me most at the moment. Particularly after yesterday's display. Why? Is there still this collective failure or refusal to say what we see? Roy Walker will be turning in his grave. Say what you see. And what you see is a deranged liar. Lying. In a deranged way. And we still can't go there. Still got think pieces everywhere from the BBC down. Behaving as if these are normal circumstances being occupied by normal people. It's a Turkish proverb. And it's a thing of beauty. When a clown moves into a palace, I want to get this right because it's absolutely lovely. The palace becomes a circus. But when a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become a king. The palace becomes a circus. That's second term Trump right there. But why are we still not calling a clown a clown? Rebecca is in Glasgow. Rebecca, what do you think?
Hello. I think that everything's down to self-preservation.
Mm.
We saw it start in his first term, with the likes of Bandy Lee losing her position at university, other top psychiatrists that were coming out, they were telling everybody what they were seeing very plainly, and they were very careful around their wording, but it still had adverse consequences on them. I follow a number of people online,
sure,
the likes of Ben Mycelis, Aaron Parnas, Brian Tyler Cohen, and they're trying to get it out there. But they're finding that they're being deplatformed all the time. They're also finding threats to their lives.
Don Lemon got locked up, didn't he?
So yes.
You think, I mean, self-interest is generous, and none of us know how we would behave in circumstances that we are not yet in, but there's a combination here of wanting to stay in the game and therefore needing to abide by certain restrictions, otherwise you'll get sent off, you'll get disqualified. And then, of course, you move into the realms of cowardice and people who are surrendering their responsibility to speak truth to power because they're frightened of what power will do to them in return. I don't know where the line is. I do need to stress that Roy Walker is alive and well. So just for the avoidance of doubt, today I've managed to resurrect George H.W. Bush and kill off Roy Walker. My apologies to everybody involved for that.
He
must be getting on a bit, though. Carry on, Rebecca.
This is why governments are trading so lightly. We can all see and say what we want.
Yes.
We can all do it, but governments right now are trading very lightly because he is so volatile. But it's going to come a point where they're going to have to sit down and say, we can't do this anymore. We literally cannot do this anymore.
It feels like we might be approaching that moment this week with Iran, and particularly with the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is, there was another article yesterday that was posted that frightened the life out of me. And I think it was Michael Fanoni that posted it.
Sure.
And it was either J.D. Vance or one of his ilk had said that his ICE agents would be going door to door to check people's status. Now, we've seen this before, and I think the world is now so conveniently divided that people are not going to stand up for themselves or stand up for each other because of the fear of repercussions on themselves.
Yeah.
And this is, we are now in a position where we don't have time to analyse these things. We have to be acting now, because if we don't, then we have got a person who's sitting in the White House and saying the quiet bit out loud now. And it's not just that. He has got this little group of people who are pushing him on. They know his mental state. But it's convenient for them. They're making money out of it. They're getting the... He's clearing the path for them.
So there's lots of reasons here for why people aren't doing what might strike some of us as being necessary and obvious. And they're compelling reasons. Self-interest or self-protection, however you want to share them. But why then, and within the case of politicians, there's diplomatic considerations as well, clearly, albeit that everyone seems to be learning the lesson that if you tickle his toes on a Tuesday, he'll still punch you in the face on a Wednesday. But why then would British commentators still be so craven, cowardly, and spectacular and catastrophically wrong? And I'm not going to let you say because they're doing what their bosses tell them to do, because I know that that isn't true in the case of prominent newspaper columnists, for example. Why would they still be so reluctant to watch what we've just watched, to listen to what we've just listened to hear what we've just heard, and not conclude that offering any support for Donald Trump is obviously both disastrous and ridiculous in equal measure?
Because I think at the moment, because nobody's doing anything about it, they're looking at who's next in the White in number 10. And if he were to get in, then their positions are on a shiggly peg. And I think that I think it's literally looking at the bigger picture, because we've got our own Timo Trump. And if that were to get into power, then everybody who has spoken out or said anything would be in exactly the same position as the people over on the other side of the pond.
Okay, I mean, I don't agree with that last bit, but I haven't got a better analysis to offer up, I think dismiss
it. In my honest opinion, I think we're beyond the days of articles of impeachment. I think in order for things to go back to some sort of balanced position, you're looking at Article 2, Section 4, and get rid of the entire administration. Because if, you know, it's the little quiet ones in the background, the Stephen Millers of the administration, who are literally just lining everything up nicely. They get rid of the Mad King, and then they take over and say, well, it is what it is, and carry on regardless. So the entire administration has to go.
I suppose it's the reluctance to call him a Mad King that is underpinning what we're talking about today, but you've offered up some powerful explanations as to why that would be. Whether or not it would change anything, of course, you've also answered, because if enough people were doing it, then the pressure for change, the pressure for regime change, to coin a phrase that's popular in a slightly different context this week, would become irresistible. And that's why he surrounds himself so completely with sycophants, not just in terms of colleagues and cronies, but in terms of media and commentary as well, because it's the only way you can sustain this level of lie. And that's where we're back to. We've done the derangement, we're back to the dishonesty. 10:57 is the time. But thank you, Rebecca. From Scotland to Sweden, Peter's in Stockholm. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm a huge fan.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Emily, the first caller, set me up quite nicely for what I want to say. She said that we live in separate realities.
Yeah.
And I think the point is polarity, and I think you've said that, so I'm just nicking that off you. The point is polarity, and that's also why I would like to say I don't actually think he's mad or deranged.
Do you not? See, I didn't used to either, but I now would probably, I'd probably fight that one.
No, but I think he's moving within some type of semblance of rationality, and I think the rationality is no. I think, sorry, Chase, to disagree here, but I think the point here is, I think what he's accomplished, and it's, I say it in a neutral sense, he's accomplished the undermining of our shared understanding of what passes for reality. If you think about fake news and alternative facts, when he says things, I don't think he necessarily needs to believe it himself. The point is only to erode what we can see as our shared reality. And why that benefits him, and this is the point about being rational, I think he understands that division is useful for him. Without a shared reality, there's less accountability. You can weaken institutions by framing them as something they're not getting so much pushback. And with the weakened institutions, you have fewer constraints. If you have a fragmented world, which he is, you know, all of his actions point to that. I'm not sure if that is his plan. But what he gets from a fragmented world is more leverage in negotiations, which suits his maximalist ambitions on the world stage. So I think it's not so much that he is acting as a mad person. I think he wants the division. He wants the polarity. It suits him to have a fragmented world, both domestically and on the international stage.
And of course, it suits Vladimir Putin even more. But that could just be a coincidence. That's not necessarily...
That's probably a coincidence, yeah. But I think now I really... I don't want to be too much of a hobby psychologist.
Don't worry.
But I do think there is evidence to suggest that he does really admire strong men, authoritarian types. I think there is something, and I think there's something a little bit, and I don't want to be too dismissive to Americans, but in their culture, I do notice something about winners and losers. They like to, in my opinion, obsess a little bit about that. And so I think that's why he does get these applause sometimes, when he depicts people as either being winners or losers.
Yeah, and that's why he loves the wrestling so much. I mean, when the first explained to me, I can't remember who it was, that it might have been Johnny Vaughan, actually, that you need to understand WWF, is it called? Or that's the World Wildlife Fund. But the showbiz wrestling thing, you need to understand that to understand a lot about Trump. And they sent me a couple of articles about it. It was absolutely fascinating. And it ties in with some of what you describe. I suppose I would defend the deranged thesis by saying all you're doing is describing method in his madness. You're not necessarily disproving the madness. But I tell you what else Peter has done. Thank you, Peter. What would it be like if you knew someone like this? People must. There must be people watching Donald Trump thinking, God, just like my ex, or just like my boss, or just like my brother, or just like my sister. I wonder if we get a phone in out of that one day. I don't think today. I think we're all probably in danger of trumping out at the moment. But if you actually do recognise, because a lot of people use a lot of phrases. Peter, a little cautious than many when it comes to amateur psychology. I'm probably not as cautious as I should be and not as cautious as him. But when you recognise that personality type, that kind of character, the person, bit like Boris Johnson, who doesn't seem to process truth and untruth in the way that the rest of us do, but who is presented with a series of choices, some of which happen to be truth and others untruth. And his decision about which choice to take is defined entirely by self-interest or something more psychologically subtle. I find that really, really interesting. In fact, why don't you text me? I'm not taking calls on it. It's WWE, not WWF. Why don't you just text me on whether or not you know somebody who Trump reminds you of, or indeed vice versa, and then I will judge. So, got one. He's just like my dad. There we go. I'm not paying for your therapy, but I am poised to possibly do a phone-in later this week or later this month, built upon the idea that he does actually remind you of somebody you know. The time now is 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Israel says its military has killed two of Iran's most senior officials in a strike on Tehran overnight. Security Chief Ali Larijani was last seen on Friday, and Iran has not yet confirmed if he's dead or injured. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has the details.
If the claims by Israel's defense minister are correct, then two more key figures within the Iranian regime have been killed in the latest overnight attacks on Tehran. Ali Larijani was the country's top security official. Just 3 weeks ago, he was in Geneva leading Iran's delegation in talks with the United States. Also assassinated, Gholam Reza Soleimani, the commander of Iran's besieged militia, accused by many Iranians of the brutal repression of demonstrators in the country earlier this year.
The government has played down tensions with the US after President Trump criticised Sir Keir Starmer. Donald Trump wants the UK to help clear the Strait of Hormuz, but the Prime Minister says he will not be drawn into the wider conflict. Hundreds of people in Kent are being urged to contact health officials after a meningitis outbreak killed two students there. The UK Health Security Agency has confirmed cases of meningitis B in the Canterbury area linked to a local nightclub. Routine vaccination against the infection was rolled out in 2015, which means many students are not protected. Volodymyr Zelensky is set to meet the Prime Minister in London later. Britain and Ukraine will sign a new defence deal to manufacture and supply new drones. Ivana Stradna from the Foundation for the Defence of Democracies has told LBC it's an important visit.
This is a really step in the right direction because what's happening right now with Iran, a lot of people in the West are worried that we are going to forget about Ukraine. And this is a step in the right direction to send a clear signal to Ukraine, but also to Vladimir Putin, that Europe is not going to fall for that trick.
And the Chancellor is preparing to make a major speech on AI later. Rachel Reeves is expected to announce £2.5 billion of new funding for the technology. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 points at 10,373. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the UK, but turning brighter this afternoon with a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
I'm here with Charlie Bigham, and there is a lovely hint of spice in the air.
It's my chicken tikka masala. I start by browning the onions with garlic and ginger, then add hand-selected spices and tender yogurt-marinated chicken.
Smells amazing. I'm getting cumin, coriander, turmeric.
Yes, and a little fenugreek. Then I finish the rich masala sauce with mango chutney and nigella seeds. Cheers.
We should do curry night every week.
Only if you learn to cook.
Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11, and it is time for a conversation about domestic politics for the first time in what feels like an age. And I make no apology for returning to one of my all of my favourite subjects, with a couple of glorious and often hilarious exceptions, are favourite subjects precisely because I think they're so important. I could be wrong, of course. I mean, the things that I think are really important that may turn out in the great scheme of things not to be. But I think we're usually more right than wrong. And when it comes to the relationship between the younger generation and work, I can't think of higher priorities for a government in the long term than taking as big a chunk as possible out of this army of 18 to 24-year-olds who are not in education, employment or training. It seems to be to the benefit of absolutely everybody to get these wheels turning, but more than anybody else, to the benefit of the people caught in this limbo. And I obsess a little bit about the fact that I've never nailed this subject. I'm not coming at it from the angle that I've failed to nail before. In fact, it may be part of the reason why I have failed to nail it, is that I keep coming at it from the wrong angle, because I work on the principle that there's an element of choice involved, and that young people are opting out through choice. And some parents have told me that they are, and some young people have told me that they are. But I look at the figures. I look at that number of a million, and that that description of a NEET, not in education, employment or training. And I presume that there is choice involved, that people are choosing not to engage. If I was a Daily Mail columnist, I would presume that they're all lying about having mental health problems, or they're all lying about their circumstances in order to avoid getting work. But happily, I'm not, and never will be a Daily Mail columnist. But that doesn't mean I'm right about everything. It's perfectly possible not to be evil and still to be wrong. So I think it may be wrong to come at this always from the angle of choice, of people who could work but have chosen not to because the the workplace is so toxic, or the property prices are so high, or the pressures are so unbearable, or the consequences of long COVID or COVID have robbed people of a degree of agency that they would otherwise have had. What if you're in this category of people through no fault of your own, through no choice. Polly Toynbee, who remains one of the finest journalists in the land, has written an article today which, well, she does something that will be completely anathema to people like Richard Littlejohn, is that she actually went out to experience the phenomenon that she was writing about for herself. When Richard Littlejohn wants to know about what's going on in the world, he watches 25-year-old episodes of The Bill from his gated community in Florida for much of his career. When Polly Toynbee wants to find out about what's going on with young people and jobs, she goes to the Job Centre in Tower Hamlets in London and sits in on meetings beside work coaches as they have their weekly encounters with unemployed young people. And that is what she has been doing this week, or last week. And she met people, like a 19-year-old, who did leave her last job because the circumstances had become unbearable, but had no idea how difficult it would be to get another job. So she, with her work coach, goes through goes through vacancies, and is told by her jobs coach, by her work coach, that 3,000 people will be applying for the 30 vacancies for administrators and caseworkers that have scrolled past them on the screen. I'll say that again, because I think this might be the sort of gold Rosetta Stone that I've been looking for to understand this issue better. And it's embarrassing for me that I've got it so horribly wrong, if indeed it turns out that I have. So they find 30 vacancies for a 19-year-old woman in London who has a history of work and 6 GCSEs. She was working in a pharmacy for a year, but left because the atmosphere became toxic. She says, now, if I'd known how hard it was to get another job, I never would have left. I'd have sucked up the toxicity. And they find 30 jobs on the screen. And the work coach says 3,000 people will be applying for these jobs. 3,000 people. And then she encounters another young person, Ali, who has a degree in maths and thought that that would help him get a job in finance or accounting, since he passed his finals in 2024. It hasn't. He's worked in temporary jobs, in stock rooms. He applies still for all of the jobs, but then they turn out to be commission only or working from home. So, as he would say, not real jobs. That's not what he's looking for. He's signed up for a charity program that helps find work experience because, in his own words, he's so bored at home. Another talks about his passion being IT, has a BTEC level 3 in computing science. That's about the same as 3A levels. He got an interview recently, but says, I was too nervous. I think I messed it up. I didn't have the confidence. So his coach is arranging him to have interview practice. There are training courses, but, at the moment, there's nothing for them. Did you know that in 2009, Gordon Brown introduced a scheme to help people into work, particularly young people into work, whose lives had been turned upside down by the global financial crisis? I don't think you heard about it, probably, or if you did, you've forgotten. It was called the Future Jobs Fund, and it boosted participants' chance of employment by 27%. And David Cameron axed it in 2010 without having waited to see the results that showed a £7,750 gain per participant in increased wages and tax receipts. So this isn't about young people choosing not to work, and I'm sorry that I've conducted so many conversations from the perspective that it is. This is about young people who simply can't find work. And it's about what this government, in the hope of emulating the huge success of the last Labour government, it's about what this government is planning to do to change things. I need to talk to employers, and I need to talk to 18 to 24-year-olds, because what is on the table is something that I don't have the skills or indeed the knowledge to properly unpick or analyse. What they are suggesting, what they are proposing, what they are doing is offering a £3,000 subsidy to employers to hire young people who are currently on benefits and have been out of work for 6 months. So they're redirecting the money from the benefits bill to the wage packet of the young person. The employer is then freed of the responsibility of paying this person until they've had an opportunity to get their feet under the table or to get their hair wet. It would be a six-month-long subsidised wage role for the 18 to 24-year-olds. That's one element of it. You've also got a £2,000 grant to encourage smaller employers to take on new apprentices. The current apprenticeship levy has been used to invest in existing staff historically, and they want to focus on young people and new starters in jobs. So I want to know what it's like to be a young person who really, really wants to work but isn't. And I want to know from employers about, well, I mean, partly why you're not hiring, I suppose, but I'm much more interested in whether or not this help sounds like it might work, because it did work under the last Labour government. Not just the Future Jobs Fund, but their broader policies as well did turn things around. The New Deal for young unemployed people got very large numbers of people into work. But as Polly Toynbee points out in The Guardian today, the economy was on an upswing at the time. Donald Trump hadn't just started a war in Iran, and the general air, economically speaking, was a lot more positive than it is today. So there it is. I mean, a classic phone-in in a way, but one which I'd like you to approach from the opposite angle from the one we've adopted most recently. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. And I just want you to tell me, and I do like, and I don't know whether this is a reflection of my age as well. Obviously, if you are aged between 18 to 24 and you are, and you can't find a job, but you want one, and you turn your radio on to hear some old git claiming that you've chosen to opt out or that you are making decisions, which I understand and sympathise with, based upon the breach of the social contract. That's not you I'm describing. You would go and do almost anything at the moment just to get going, to get moving, but you can't get moving because there's 3,000 people applying for every job that pops up on your screen when you're down at the job centre. Just talk me through what that is. How hard is it for a young unemployed person in Britain in 2026 to find a job? All right? 0345 6060973. And if you're an employer, I'd really like this to be an upbeat conversation, but obviously if you are looking at what I'm looking at and thinking, no way is that going to work, then I need to hear your voice. If you are an employer, would £3,000 in subsidy give you what you need to take a six-month-long chance on a currently unemployed young person? So I want it from both angles. But before I get stuck into this, I have to say an awful lot of people think that they have Donald Trump's in their life, judging from my inbox. Dads, bosses, friends, colleagues, schools, old school pals. We may get stuck into that later in the month. But what I want to focus on now is this crucial question of how hard it is for an 18 to 24-year-old to find work. And I mean meaningful work. And I'm not going to apologise for that. I mean a job that you think might turn into a career. It doesn't have to be degree level. It doesn't have to be highly paid to start with, but a job with what we used to call prospects. I don't know why I said what we used to call prospects. We can still call them prospects. Sometimes I feel I'm turning into everybody's nan or Miranda's mum. It's what I call prospects. Everyone calls it prospects, you flan. What are you going on about? So a job with, you want a job with prospects. That's why the lad in Polly Toynbee's article, who has done temping and who has worked in warehouses, is not happy with what he can get access to. A, there's no security. B, there's no permanence. And C, and crucially, there's no prospects. There's no prospects. And I don't want to confine this conversation to graduates. I really want you to call me if you got your A-levels or your GCSEs or your MVQs. And you were proud when you passed them. You've done your bit. You've kept your side of the bargain. And the workplace has not yet appeared in your life. I don't know that, I think we've all let you down, but I don't know that it's easy to apportion blame. All I do know is that today, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming you. It's not your fault, and it must feel like it is. You wake up in the morning and it's another day of twiddling your thumbs, or another day of going down to the job centre to be one of 3,000 people applying for 30 jobs, or another day of being told that maybe you should retrain as this or that, or we can send you on a course. And all you want's a job. And then you listen to old people, presumably not just on your radio, but also in your family, who think it's as easy as it was when they were young. Well, I did 7 paper rounds, says your dad. Or I went out and got a job in River Island on Worcester High Street my first day after leaving school, says this old git on the radio. Oh, I was working as a waiter every evening and selling suits all day every day. Yeah, but I can't. The opportunity is not there. The question of why it's not there is interesting to me. But the question that is much, much more interesting to me is what's it actually like at the moment? And why is it so hard? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And I also want to know about employers. So you are in charge of a business. This is important. Pay attention. This is you, right? You are in, because you might not realise I'm talking about you. That happens quite a lot on the radio, largely because you're not paying proper attention because you're busy doing your job. So you are running a business, right? And in different circumstances, or perhaps in current circumstances, you would be able to hire a young person. You could take on someone new tomorrow if the circumstances were slightly different, okay? Would a 3 grand subsidy towards their wages for 6 months be enough to make you give it a whirl? I just want you to tell me whether or not this sounds like sound policy. It's dry, it's potentially dull, but it's important. Does this sound like sound policy to you? I'm imagining what I would be like, and forgive me, I'm always a little bit unpleasant when it comes to employers telling me they can't afford to hire young people. I have a terrible habit of saying things like, oh yeah, what car do you drive? And they say, a Bugatti. And I go, ha! Ha 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 ha! So, but that's not very helpful either, because you're the business person and I'm not. So you are not currently hiring, but you could. What would it take? What would the tweak be? And does a 3 grand subsidy for 6 months to help cover the wages, does that sound like something that would make a significant difference? And be honest, please. Leave your politics at the door and focus on the young people and your business and the importance of getting the former into the latter. It's 11:21. The number you need is 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and help support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 11. If you're just tuning in, you may never know where my inbox is currently absolutely chock-a-block with people texting or WhatsApping the words Joe Biden, the words Roy Walker is alive, and the words my dad is Donald Trump. You'll never know, unless, of course, you avail yourself of the opportunity to rewind live radio and address some of the questions I asked and rather embarrassing mistakes that I made in the course of the first hour of the programme. But on we go. Into familiar but unfamiliar territory. 18 to 24-year-olds, unprecedented numbers of them in neither education, employment, nor training. Not just why, but crucially, how hard is it to find work? And what do you think, if you're the employer, of the government's plans to provide a £3,000 subsidy that would enable you to take someone on for 6 months and train them up, get them ready to become proper earners, as it were? Let's start in Portsmouth. Daryl is there. Daryl, what would you like to say?
James, hope you're well. Love the books.
Thank you, mate.
I'm a small employer in Portsmouth.
5'4"?
5'7". I love the idea of the scheme, but for me it's just not quite enough. I don't think the subsidy is quite large enough to quench the thirst, knowing how drowned my inbox comes when I am looking for somebody to fill a position. I just know that I'd love to employ young. I'd love to help mould somebody into the industry. But for £3,000 to take a risk when I could employ somebody for a little bit more money and have them hit the ground running.
Oh, I see what you mean.
It's not quite enticing enough to think taking that risk might be worth it.
What would be? I mean, ideally, you minimise the risk through your recruitment process as well, don't you? So in the same way now that you filter through all of the CVs that you've got in pursuit of the best candidate, you would do the same with the subsidised young person and you'd back yourself then to make the right decision. So we can minimise some of the risk in some of the ways like that, but what figure do you think would turn your head?
I don't know. Because
I knew you were
going to
say that. You're no good.
I'll tell you why it's tricky. It's tricky because salaries vary so significantly that at this point right now, if I'm looking for my next person in a small business, I think a higher salary for as close to a guarantee as I could gain, whilst regarding, of course, that somebody could be a complete failure, logic suggests to me that somebody on a higher salary with experience is going to be a more likely chance of success.
I mean, you don't have to tell me what line you're in, but you're welcome to. What would training somebody up involve in your business?
For me, probably a decent amount of time and resource. So the £3,000 would probably be gone. Pretty sharply. It's not really gonna scrape the barrel of compliance training and time spent doing so.
Right. Okay, I understand. So, there are other elements there that would be very specific to what you're doing. Some people would be able to hire someone and not really have to spend any money, just time, on getting them up to sniff. It's a shame, isn't it? Because I sense
you'll begrudge me, of course, for suggesting that time is money in business, right?
Yeah, no, I know it is, but I'm saying they're not giving you time, they're only giving you money. So that's the only distinction that I'm drawing. I sense you would quite like to. What about the other benefits? If I come to work for you at 18, don't you get something in return from me that you're not going to get from someone who's already got 10 years on the clock?
Potentially, but I think that's the complete unknown variable, isn't it? And that variable can only really be achieved if it's alluring enough for me as an employer to take it on. And I mean this completely honestly. I would love the idea of taking somebody from scratch, genuinely.
I sense that, but the system as it stands doesn't make it worth your while.
It's essentially a month's wages, and that's not quite enough for me to think that it's the option.
Well, it's a month. Well, 36 grand gross is not an entry level position.
Well, when I factor in, of course, it's training. So if we talk about the time taken from the rest of the team, or from myself, or from the resources, it's a month's wages.
Okay.
Net.
Yeah. And when I say, well, it's better than nothing, you say that's not the point, James. Because
I could go and get somebody else elsewhere and likely have an income in return.
Yeah, you're great. That's brilliant. Thank you. That's really helpful. And of course, you speak only for you and for people in similar positions. There will be employers who find this a deal breaker, but it's interesting also that we can't quite put our finger on what that figure would be. Apprenticeships would be different, of course, in the context of what is subsidised and what they are designed to achieve. But if you're looking to fill a role and you got someone with no experience, then Daryl's experiences are crucial to understanding the challenge that the government faces. And in his case, they have not risen to it quite enough. Jenna is in Cambridge. Jenna, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Good morning. Hello. Well, good afternoon. Not sure what time is, but I'm calling in. I have a master's degree from Imperial. And when we graduated with my cohort, my cohort organizers told us that historically this degree would allow us to go into a start, like our next job, we should expect no less than receiving a salary of £50,000 because of what the degree had taught us and the qualifications that were associated with it.
Yes.
A lot of my friends are international students. When the sponsorship fees for them to stay in London was increased, many of them had to go home and they weren't able to find jobs that hit that 50 grand salary, let alone, also I'm aware that this is very like, this is a huge salary compared to like what a lot of people would have to start with. So I understand the...
Yeah, but it's what you signed up in hope of, so you don't need to apologise for that. You worked very, very hard on your master's and your undergraduate degree, and these were the among the reasons why you did so, was the mooted salary you'd get at the end of it.
But the point I wanted to call in with is, like, the kind of perspective that I have is that I'm a home student and I wanted to continue my studies. I found a PhD within 2 months of looking. So I had, like, a 4 months internship after my master's degree. I started looking in January. I had secured a position by the end of February. Many of my friends were still looking for jobs in London in the field that we graduated in.
So had you not signed up for a PhD, you fear that you'd be in the position that they're in?
Very likely, yeah.
What about the internship? Why would that not have led... forgive me if I'm being nosy, but you know how this show works. Why would the internship not necessarily have led to a permanent position?
The internship was working for... I was a research associate for a PhD student in Mozambique.
Oh, okay.
it wasn't something I necessarily wanted to say. Like, I love working there. The role was amazing.
You've got me the giggles now. I was a research associate. Associate for a PhD student in Mozambique. Well, why aren't you doing that full time?
I could go back. I had a great life there.
Well, you said internship. I don't know why. I thought you're working for a big, like a FTSE 100 or an engineering company.
Oh,
or
PhD student, James.
No, I know you are now, but you weren't then, were you? So now you're going to be a doctor when you finish the next round of studies, and you're rolling the dice again on that being the qualification that will open the doors that are still shut in the faces of your cohort from master's level education. It's scary, right?
Yeah, it's scary, but I've got my fingers crossed. I think I'm going to be okay. Lot of my friends haven't had the fortune that I've had to be able to be like a home student, be able to pay home fees, for example.
Many of my current friends,
where I work now, they're getting PhD offers and they're incredible students, but the fees for international students don't let them stay because they need to pay 3 times the amount that I do.
Yeah, so which is, of course, I think a conservative policy driven to drive down overall immigration figures. So great, well done. Whatever the... it's not quite a brain drain, is it? It's more like a sort of brain moat or a brain portcullis to stop brains coming in to the country to study and then often stay and work. The final question, I promise. If you could go back and ask your master's supervisor why these £50,000 starting salary jobs hadn't materialised for your peer group, what do you think they would say?
I think that the value of work my friends who've done the degree with me offer, I think the work that they can offer is valued less now.
Okay, so the jobs might be there, but the salaries will be lower.
No, the jobs are there, but the salaries are too low to sponsor them to stay or...
Oh, okay. Oh, right, I get it. Yeah, I mean, again, I think every caller, and I need to be more patient about this, I sometimes get a bit allergic to specifics. I say, well, that's very specific to you. And I'm going to defend myself on the being a research associate for a PhD student in Mozambique. That one I could say. That's a little bit too specific to teach us any very broad lessons, but the rest of it is not. And of course this is about specifics. Daryl's specifics in Portsmouth of £3,000 not being enough to take a punt on somebody new when he's got a drawer full of CVs from people who've already got experience. There are specifics there that help us understand the likelihood of the policy succeeding. In Jenna's case, there are specifics that help us understand why getting the kind of job that you were expecting hasn't happened. But whether or not the government can do anything to help in this case is unlikely. 11:32 is the time. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
Israeli officials say their military has killed the Iranian security chief in a strike on Tehran overnight. Iran hasn't yet confirmed if Ali Larijani has been killed or injured. He was last seen in public on Friday. Ministers are playing down tensions with the US after Donald Trump criticised the prime minister again. The US president wants his NATO allies to help secure the Strait of Hormuz. Health Secretary Wes Streeting will give a statement in the House of Commons this lunchtime after a meningitis outbreak in Kent. Two students died after cases were linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. And Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet with Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street later as Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal. Number 10 says it will bring together expertise to manufacture and supply drones to Ukraine. LBC weather turning brighter for most of the UK this afternoon, feeling warm as well with a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Frustrating is printing a recipe where the quality fades with every ingredient. Smart is a printer that delivers high-quality ink over time. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP Smart Tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP Smart Tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Ratimi likes Pension Bee's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension Bee has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension Bee makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension Bee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
25 minutes to 12 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Andy's been in touch. He says, 10 to 11 this morning was the best hour of radio you have ever done. Far be it from me to agree with that, Andy, but if you did miss it, then don't forget you can download everything these days from Global Player or the LBC app. You can rewind and listen back, even pause live radio. Well, you can pause live radio now, right? You can pause me and you could rewind me, but you can't fast forward. If you haven't paused first, you can't move now to 11:46, for example, unless I get the time wrong, which, given the state of the first hour, some elements of the first hour of the programme, Andy's high praise notwithstanding, is perfectly plausible and feasible. Henry Riley's up next, 11:46, in fact, he'll be here. So you could fast forward to Henry Riley if you could fast forward live radio, but you can't. Henry Riley will be here with the latest instalment of Riley's Reform Roundup. And I'm told that there's a bit of a clamour now in the newsroom, among all the young journalists here, who are all very keen to get involved in this glorious feature. So we may even have a kind of Son of Riley's Reform Roundup later in the programme, with another LBC journalist helping us expose Nigel Farage's party to the same levels of scrutiny that the right-wing media reserves for Labour, and increasingly the Greens, actually. 11:37 is the time. George is in Vauxhall. George, back to employing young people, or not. What would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for taking my call. Big fan of yours.
Thank you, man.
I run a small tree surgery company and have done for...
Just small trees, is it? Like bond size?
Small in number of employees.
He was a small employer in Portsmouth and a small tree surgeon in Vauxhall. Yeah. Sorry, George. Carry on.
I'm actually 6 foot one, so not as small as I sound. There's another joke for you. I've been running it for about 25 years. Wow. I'm kind of in the succession phase of the business. But I employed someone from the New Deal scheme, which was run by the previous Labour administration. Yeah. And at that time, the bursary was £400. So yeah. that's inflation for you.
Yes,
but
it is.
It was very helpful, and it was an incentive at the time. Because
it meant you could take someone on and you'd get help with their wages until they were an employee who you didn't need help with their wages for, because they were essentially paying their way.
Well, yes and no, because in that case, the £400 bursary, as it sort of was at the moment, I treated that as like a training budget.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to pay people anyway in tree surgery. It doesn't matter if they're just there dragging branches or whatever.
No,
you're still
going to
pay them a decent wage for the work that they're doing. But what the problem is in our industry is the technical expertise that you need, the training you need to use a chainsaw safely on the ground and all of that does cost money. And that can be a disincentive for employers. And they may be tempted to buy in that expertise rather than grow it themselves or train people internally. I prefer, unlike your caller from Portsmouth, to grow my own staff.
Yeah.
Because when you import people from other businesses, they come with all their bad habits, or this is how we used to do it. And if you've got a good, productive team that are working well together, sometimes that can be quite disruptive.
Yeah.
And you end up... So I've always been keen to grow my own people. I've had two apprentices, which one of which is still with me 10 years after doing his apprenticeship.
Wow.
And then the most recent employee we had, we took him on as an 18-year-old, and we basically trained him from scratch. And now he has been with us probably 4 years, and he's got all his tickets now, and he's shaping up to be one of our best new climbers.
That's brilliant. So I sense that the idea, depending, of course, on where you are in your own arc as an employer, as a business owner, you're quite drawn to this government
policy.
Very
much so.
Good.
It's weird, because about 2 weeks ago, when they, you know, you hear about this, you know, this 1 million young people.
Of course you do.
You know, and I've been saying to my partner, they should bring in something like the New Deal. They need to do something like that, because in my industry, where there's a lot of technical qualifications required, that can be a bit of a...
Of course it can.
You know, and £3,000 actually goes quite a long way. That would get them... The basic training they need to work safely on the ground is... You know, to be able to use a chainsaw safely, but also to be able to climb the tree and rescue the climber if they get into difficulty. If they cut themselves up a tree, they are if the emergency services turn up with an ambulance, well, they can't get someone 30 foot up the tree. So
This is why I'm an idiot, isn't it? For being... No, seriously, I said to the last caller that I used to get annoyed with specifics when I was having conversations like this, because it's like I'm looking for the magic answer, the magic solution. But of course, it's all about specifics, and the specifics of being a tree surgeon make this proposal really important and attractive, because you can't have people doing what you do without any backup or training, and the training is expensive, and you're risking it. It minimises your risk, doesn't it, in a way?
Well, it does. It does to some extent. You've got that, but, I mean, £3,000 would pretty much train someone to use a chainsaw on the ground and be able to do an area, you know, to be trained in aerial rescue. And that is a really good starting point. And if they didn't stop, even for one reason or another, they didn't continue their employment with you, that would make them eminently employable by any other tree company. They would, you know, to be able to buy in someone who can use a chainsaw safely on the ground and can do do an aerial rescue, would, you know, that would pretty much get you any job in any tree surgery company. So even if you weren't a good fit, say, with our company, that would certainly
you've got movable
skills. And I wouldn't
have
lost anything out. No,
that's what I mean by reducing, not minimising. Doesn't remove your risk. Final question, and you don't have to answer it, because I don't know if it's fair, not on you, but on young people in general. Over that 25-year career, have you noticed any significant changes broad, generalised changes in the calibre of candidate coming to you?
No.
I didn't. I'm glad you said that.
I think it's on the employer. You've got to give people a chance.
Yeah.
Now, this guy I was telling you about that we trained from the ground up, over 4 years.
Stop saying
literally,
you're a tree surgeon, and you're growing your own people, and you're growing things from the ground up. I'm just dying of puns over here.
I'm a comedian, and I don't know it.
Go on.
But basically, he had a little bit of a blip along the way.
Okay.
And the crew were going on, he's no good, he's not really pulling his weight, and all the rest. And I went, maybe that's on us. Maybe we haven't trained him properly. So I put him with a different person, a more experienced person. I said, look, we need to make sure that this person, we have to give him a second chance to because I suspect that he's okay and it's on us.
Sure.
We haven't trained him properly. And, so we did that. And, of course, he turned a corner. He was the person I suspected. And he's gone on, to achieve everything that he's achieved.
And a goodness of benefit to both of you.
We need to give young people a chance,
Beautifully put. I worry sometimes that we live in a country where we forget good stuff done by Labour government for reasons that are pretty obvious to anyone who listens to this programme and my pet obsessions on a regular basis. But that new Labour's New Deal delivering significant change, and then the Future Jobs Fund that that Gordon Brown brought in 2009, providing measurable improvement to the lives of both employees and employers. And then David Cameron and George Osborne came in the following year and scrapped it without having waited to see the results because, as I have often mentioned to you, austerity was an ideological decision, not an economic one. That was lovely. Thank you, George. I another one, actually, Dan in touch to talk about the New Deal being the way through which he got his job within the NHS in 1998, and he's still there 28 years later. It's coming out to 11:45. A little more on this and some Riley's reform roundup on the horizon.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The Prime Minister stood up and gave details of more than £50 million that will be directed at a contingency fund to help those of you who heat your house through heating oil. Rob is in our pros. You heat your home through heating oil. Can you give us a rough idea of the prices that you're having to pay?
First of all, it's an absolute scandal. I'll tell you the latest price at the moment. It was 61 pence a litre. It's now £1.45 a litre. I'm being quoted for 2,000 litres that will last us about 4 to 5 months. Used to be £1,100. Now they're quoting me this morning £3,038.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today?
Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
11:48 is the time. I actually had some tree-related questions, but I felt that Will was too much. So I've got my raised bed. I've put the new topsoil on my raised bed, ready to. I'll do my beetroots probably this weekend. But there's a tree in next door's garden. It's some sort of fir tree, and it sheds these little brown balls. They're like, like mini Maltesers. They're tiny, and they sprout like you wouldn't believe. I had cardboard down on my raised bed all winter, and they've even sprouted under that. And I imagine there's anything you can do about it, but I felt that would have been a slightly inappropriate or unprofessional question to ask a tree surgeon who spends his life up trees with chainsaws. Apart from chopping down next door's tree, which is frowned upon, even in Brentford, I don't know what my options would have been. But next time I get a tree surgeon on, be prepared. Henry Riley is here with Riley's... we're not, are we?
No, Paul and Clapham.
No, thank you, Paul. Don't call us, we'll call you, I think. I've got a few people asking how they submit their... But I don't... Patrick says, I've got... And it is St. Patrick's Day. I have a theme song for Riley's Reform Roundup. How do I send it in for review?
Get on the email.
Send it to Henry. Riley@global.
I thought we were going to do it all together.
At global.com.
There we go. Thank you. We'll work on that.
So, for people not familiar with Riley's Reform Roundup, it is our attempt to expose reform correctly to the kind of scrutiny that the rest of the UK media happily provides to other political parties, most notably the Labour Party. And it is, as ever, hard to know where to begin. But we are often led to Kent.
Thanks for having me back on, by the way, James.
You're very welcome.
After Friday.
Thanks.
There's Kent, which, to remind listeners, is the... we had a bit of a bust up on Friday,
We didn't. But if you were to go to the racist corners of Twitter, you will find people who think that we... So Henry and I can't even engage in a little bit of, what would you call... So what's the theory? The theory is that I have banned you from... Because you weren't on yesterday.
Because I wasn't here.
Because you were recovering from your overnight shift.
Yes.
Or your late night shift.
And because you rule the roost, you...
I rule. They treat me like a god, you know.
They decreed that I was banned from your programme for showing you up, James, but...
Love it.
I've been allowed back on.
Carry on.
Kent, which is the sort of shop window for Reform UK
Council.
Right,
that's enough. Thank you very much. It's 10 to 12. Henry Riley's Reform Roundup has hit the buffers. Go on, back to Kent.
That was... And they made a lot of hay of this council. It's a huge authority, and reform won by a landslide in May, and there's now a concern because potholes was one of their key priorities. However, pothole numbers have now doubled in a year. Kent County Council said in January 2026 there had been 7,200 reports compared to just 2,800 in the same month of 2025. A rise of 157%. Reform UK say the recent extreme weather is one of the main reasons for the impact on highways. Yeah. A spokesperson said there was a prolonged cold spell after Christmas followed by persistent heavy rainfall. The Conservatives, though, said, I'm absolutely shocked at the state of our roads in Kent under this Reform UK administration. The cabinet member responsible for the highways needs to significantly up his game to overcome this major pothole problem.
So they've got worse by a factor of 157%.
In terms of the reports, a Reform source did tell me, though, that they have highlighted the issue and that they're getting more reports of potholes because
they've
done so well at sort of highlighting the issue.
Right. Yeah, so there's no problems exactly the same, it's just more people are pointing it out.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Next.
Warwickshire, and you'll hear more about this with my colleague George Ike later on, who's spoken with the 19-year-old leader of Warwickshire.
So he's joining Riley's Reform Roundup.
He's trying to get on the bandwagon,
I think. He's jumping on the bandwagon.
Well, he's probably heard
there was a vacancy, Henry.
I know. I'm going to be sort of trying to cut out the line or cut the wires.
Do we need... George Ike. His name doesn't lend itself to an alliterative little slogan as easily as yours does. Ike's Spikes.
I'll have a think, actually.
Spikey Ike. Carry on.
A Reform UK council leader has defended his actions. I spoke about this a couple of days ago. You may remember this, James. George Finch, who's the leader there, had accused the police of withholding some information. The police say it would have jeopardised a potential rape trial. He's facing a no-confidence vote today on his leadership. More on that later as we get it. But an independent investigation has now ruled that he breached the council's code of conduct by publishing information that could have jeopardised the trial. And he published a letter on his social media at the time, which was said to have... he was asking for more information that wasn't in the public domain. The police said there was good reason for that.
Yes. It's a familiar problem for some people who like to deny that they're far-right adjacent is that they claim to care about the victims of certain types of crime and end up potentially jeopardising trials of people accused of certain types of crime. If only we could identify what the common factor was. On we go, Henry.
Back to Kent, and Reform have been accused of a U-turn. They previously promised Kent would be the first council to declare a migration emergency. This was due to appear at Thursday's full council meeting, but after advice, it's now suggested they're going to... Well, it would leave the council in breach of electoral rules because there's a by-election. So they've now been accused of U-turning by saying they will not put forward this motion to declare a climate emergency. The exact wording of the motion was that it was to declare an illegal migration emergency in the county, describing small boat crossings as an invasion which put a strain on public services and finances. Various reformed councillors, two in particular, put their names to this. It called on the leader of the council to demand the government stop the arrival of small boats in Kent immediately and cover its costs. But that a motion has now been pulled.
Do they want them all to go to Essex instead?
Well, they just don't want them in Kent.
No.
So unclear how you tackle that.
What's the other side of Kent? No, not Amsterdam. This side. Like if you went... Hampshire, is it?
Hampshire... I'm trying to think. Right. Yeah, I think it would be, wouldn't it? I'm terrible with
Essex,
geography.
London. Yeah, me too. Carry on.
Can we go elsewhere? In Wales.
Do we know whether the leader of Reform UK in Wales lives in Wales? Yeah.
So just to remind, this is Dan Thomas, who was the previous Tory council leader of Barnet. He then was registered and lived in Bath. And we don't know what his sort of exact... location is.
He has been accused of not living in Wales by political rivals.
Yes, he's been accused of not living in Wales. He says he does live in Wales.
And his former colleagues in Barnet said he told them he was moving to Bath. Which is not in Wales.
There are
Baths in Wales, but Bath is not in Wales.
That's not the actual place. Yeah. He told Conservative councillors on Barnet Council that he was moving to Bath as opposed to somewhere in Wales.
I'll help out again. So we've got builders in at the moment, and you probably can't hear. Oh, it stopped again. You probably can't hear it, and now I get loads of messages saying that you caught. Oh, there it goes again, and it distracted Henry because he's not been doing this as long as I
know.
He's not used to just carrying on regardless and ploughing through all manner of distractions as if like a swan. With my little feet paddling away furiously below the waterline. Henry just allowed his feet there to come into view.
Very unprofessional. a Reform UK councillor who aspires to be a Senedd member has been criticised after appearing to claim that the Church of England functions in Wales. Despite the fact the Church of Wales has been a separate entity since 1920, Ian McIntosh defected from the Conservative Party in 2025. He now leads the Reform group on Powys County Council. He was on a review show and said, "I picked up this story in The Sun and it's entitled For God's Sake." Now, it's a story about how the Green Party would drop the Church of England as this nation's established church.
Ooh, damn.
The presenter then said, "We need to point out this is not applicable in Wales, of course." When asked about that and whether he knew that the separate establishment of an Anglican church in Wales 106 years ago, he said, "Yes, I did know that, but it wasn't what I was focusing on."
Oh, okay. 19th century disestablishment, if memory serves.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and it led to the to being a separate entity in 1920.
You can hear the builders on the radio. Thank you, Johnny. Carry on, Henry.
Two more national issues now.
Labour is four. Four.
This is number five now.
Because you were in Perda yesterday.
I wasn't here yesterday. Labour are calling for a tax investigation into Richard Tice from Reform UK. It was on the front of the Sunday Times that he had, quote, avoided nearly £600,000 in corporation tax through his property company. Our colleague here at LBC, Deputy Political Editor Aggie Chambray, asked him about this yesterday.
On tax, it sounds like what you're saying, and it'd be great for you to clarify. Would you encourage everyone to pay as little tax as possible if that's sort of within the legal limits?
Yes, and within the legal, by the legal limit, of course.
So that's what you should do. So you would encourage everyone in the UK to pay as little tax as they possibly can.
Legally, pay what you're legally obliged to pay. Don't morally or voluntarily give more tax to incompetent, wasteful, hard-left socialist governments to waste on your behalf. Definitely not.
So that would be Reform's policy in government. If Reform is in government...
If you, want to pay more tax, if your wonderful LBC viewers and listeners want to pay more tax, good luck to them. I suspect they all agree with me. I suspect they'll all say, I'll pay what I'm legally required to.
At a press conference in Westminster on Monday, Tice said that Quidnet Rates Limited was a UK company paying UK tax in accordance with UK laws, saying there is no obligation to pay the maximum tax required, and suggested few people would likely take such a decision.
It was quite an obscure loophole. No suggestion of illegality.
Yes.
But it has subsequently been shut down, I think, or that he's no longer in this particular...
That is true. He's no longer involved with that. He also points to Labour Party Properties Limited, which he says hasn't paid corporation tax since 2000. So there's all kinds
of... Because everyone agreed we needed to investigate Angela Rayner, so we'll just have a little investigation, will we? They're all in favour of that?
There hasn't been any call for an investigation within Reform UK into this so far.
Okay. He could always move to Dubai, and then he wouldn't have to pay any tax on his income at all. Oh, he can't do that if he's an MP, can he?
Probably not, actually.
How many is that? Six?
Six, and last one... One, two, three, four, five... No, this is six, sorry, this is number six. A related story from Richard Tice. He said £700 million Reform UK have saved in waste. Just to give you the figures, a sort of thorough breakdown, he has said that they've saved £350 million so far, but what's been flagged as curious is that he points to savings of over £400 million for 2026-2027.
Excellent.
Which obviously hasn't happened yet. He didn't go into detail about the savings, saying that the figures had been signed off as reasonable by a Section 151 finance official, but didn't give any breakdown as to how they've saved future money.
So they're just saying we've saved £700 million, but they're not actually specifying where.
That would be the...
They just published the breakdown, no?
Well, we've had a few. Let me walk you through one. I mean, Reform claims it renegotiated one particular contract in County Durham that was to do with a Teesside waste incinerator. However, it looks like since much of that came through the previous administration, Reform also claimed in Lincolnshire it had saved £13 million. However, the previous runners of Lincolnshire County Council, the Conservatives, told The Guardian that the new service had already been designed and was already awarded to the company as the preferred bidder. There's also, I mean, if you look at Kent, for example, they said that they had £39.5 million. We spoke about this at the time, James, that they'd saved of potential future spend. One MP wrote to the council and said they shouldn't use that because you can't claim to have saved £40 million when you haven't spent £40 million. They say this is through future schemes like not switching to electric.
So I have saved a million. I've saved, about £100,000 today by not buying a Porsche.
Yeah, the car analogy is probably a fair... But you might have bought a Porsche.
Let me put that in the news bulletin. James O'Brien has saved £100,000 today by not buying a Porsche, because I might have bought a Porsche.
And that is the criticism, that they haven't actually made these savings because they haven't spent the money.
And council tax is going up in all of the councils that they...
Yes, although they would say below the average
But they did promise it would go down.
On election leaflets, it said lowering your taxes.
Thank you. We're a tiny bit late. Just play a bit of that clip of Tice again, will you? I just want to ask you a question, hand on heart, all right?
Yeah.
On tax, it sounds like what you're saying, and it'd be great for you to clarify. Would you encourage everyone to pay as little tax as possible if that's sort of within the legal limits?
Yes, and within the legal, by the legal limit, of course.
So that's what you should do. So you would encourage everyone in the UK to pay as little tax as they possibly can. Pay
what you're legally obliged to pay. Don't morally or voluntarily give more tax to incompetent, wasteful, hard-left socialist governments to waste on your behalf. Definitely not.
So that would be Reform's policy in government. If Reform is in government...
If you want to pay more tax, if your wonderful LBC viewers and listeners want to pay more tax, good luck to them. I suspect... They all agree with me.
Is he trying to sound like Farage? Have you picked up on that there? Quite a few people listening have.
What, with shutting down the question, perhaps?
But also his cadence and his sort of... Also this ludicrous rhetoric. He doesn't... I mean, I presume that his parents spent enough money on his education for him to know what socialist actually means. Mm. Or even hard left, which is, I suppose, a slightly more debatable definition. But he's sort of using these ludicrous things, but more the sort of tumpty-tumpty-tum of the way that he's talking. Does he always sound like that?
I mean, he's often sort of deployed in different ways to Nigel Farage. He's seen as sort of a bit more relaxed. Well, in some ways, I mean, he's very different to Nigel Farage in the sense that for people who are maybe put off by Mr. Farage, they might not necessarily be by Richard Tice, different audiences. But I mean, you're right. He does. That is certainly a different approach to what I've seen at previous press conferences, and I've been in a few.
Well, it's not just me. It crossed my mind. But Jay says he sounds just like Farage. Callum says his speech patterns sound like a really bad impression of Farage, which is he's an odd person to do an impersonation of. But I don't know. Maybe all cults together. 6 for 6.
Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Just watch it. It's 12:03.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Israel's defence minister says two top Iranian officials have been killed in Tehran. Iran hasn't confirmed if its security chief, Ali Larijani, has been killed or injured yet. LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, has the details.
Ali Larijani was the country's top security official. Just 3 weeks ago, he was in Geneva leading Iran's delegation in talks with the United States. Also assassinated, Gholam Reza Soleimani, the commander of Iran's besieged militia, accused by many Iranians of the brutal repression of demonstrators in the country earlier this year. All of this coming at a time when President Trump continues to indicate a possible willingness to work with some government figures in Iran.
The government has played down Donald Trump's latest comments about the Prime Minister. The US President is calling on Sir Keir Starmer to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
And I say it would be really helpful if you'd send over a couple of ships, and if you have some minesweepers, which they do, it'd be very helpful. And the Prime Minister is a nice man. I think he's a very nice guy. He says, well, I'd like to ask my team.
Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson has told LBC it's not a cause for concern.
From time to time, presidents and prime ministers will come to different judgments. I'm really confident that the Prime Minister has taken the right decision when it comes to not having us trying to engage with what I think at one point was termed regime change from the sky in Iran.
The blockage of the major shipping route started more than 2 weeks ago after the US and Israel began their attacks on Iran. The new Archbishop of Canterbury says the deaths of two young people in a meningitis outbreak is a devastating loss. Hundreds of people in Kent are being urged to contact health officials for preventative antibiotics to stop the spread. The Health Secretary is going to give a statement in the House of Commons shortly. The Ukrainian president is due to meet with Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street later. Number 10 says a new defence deal will mean Britain works with the country to manufacture and supply new drones. And staff from the British Medical Association are going on strike for 2 days in a row over pay. Workers are walking out on Friday the 27th and Saturday the 28th of March. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 points at 10,388. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather feeling warmer for most of the UK this afternoon, staying dry across England and Wales with some sunshine as well. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 7 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A bit of a change of pace now. I wasn't expecting to do this, but I'm very surprised by my own reaction to it. Okay. And sometimes when I find myself surprised by my own reaction to something, it can make for quite an interesting conversation. Don't forget, we've got George Ike joining us a little later for the second round of, well, it needs a new name, Riley's Reform Roundup with George Ike. It'd be like when people stand in on holiday and it's the James O'Brien Show presented by Suella Braverman. I'm not even joking. Seriously, imagine getting trolled by your own boss. Back to that phone-in that we might have in the future about what it's like if you've got somebody who's a bit like Donald Trump in your life. I got told off on Friday. I don't know if you were listening. It was Simon in Dover. Sometimes names really stick in my mind and other times they don't. And he was perfectly entitled to tell me off, but he was being a bit unfair on me. I was not suggesting that everybody who has moved to Dubai is deserving of derision. Quite the opposite. I stressed on several occasions, I've got quite a few friends who have either moved there and come back or who are, or have been there currently. There's lots of reasons to do it. And, you know, the weather's nice and there's something a little bit unjust, I think, for people moving to a tax-free regime while almost certainly planning to come back and benefit from the infrastructure that has been paid for by people who have never benefited from emigrating to a tax-free regime. I just think that's really important. And there's something quite unpatriotic about people who've made a ton of money, partly as a consequence of benefiting from the infrastructure. So, you know, when people say, I run a business, I work bloody hard, I don't get anything from the government, and you point out, well, how would your workforce get to work without any roads? Or, you know, God forbid someone were to attack our interests overseas, what would we do to defend them without an army or a navy? And by the way, you know, all the people you employed, did they go to school? Did someone teach them to read and write? Did you pay for that yourself? Did you pay for that out of your profits or out of your own pocket? Or was that the taxpayer? Was that Muggins, the ordinary taxpayer? So I also don't like even footballers. You know, when they've made a ton of money and they decide that they're going to go and live in Dubai because then they won't have to pay any income tax on their earnings in this country. I get it. I'm not getting holier than thou about it, but I think there's an ethical dimension to tax and a patriotic dimension. So the Tice character in the last hour with Henry's thing there, talking about how everyone should strive to pay as little as possible without mentioning that what wealthy people who have inherited large sums of money often do is pay large sums of money to tax experts to find ways in which they can minimise, even if it's only temporarily because they found a loophole that subsequently gets closed. It's deeply unpatriotic to try to minimise and dilute the contribution you make to the public weal, to the public good. So what annoys me sometimes when we talk about tax is when I tell you that I'm proud to pay a lot of tax. I mean, a hell of a lot of tax these days. And I am still proud to pay it because I look at what it provides to people who are not in net profit when it comes to the relationship between their incomings and their outgoings. And it makes me feel patriotic. I never feel more patriotic on a personal level because I'm not a member of the armed forces or the public services. But I never feel more patriotic than when I contemplate how much tax that I pay. And sometimes I feel very patriotic when I remember all the work that we do together to defend the national interest against everybody who would wish it harm. The kind of people who pretend to be patriotic while actually paying accountants large sums of money to avoid paying their fair share. Their fair share. It's the difference between fair and legal. That's the distinction that I think you either understand or you don't understand. And if you don't understand it, you're who St. Paul is talking about when he describes the love of money being the root of all evil. If you do understand it, then you're comfortable and proud to pay a large amount of tax because it reflects how lucky you are to get paid a large amount of money. And you live in a society where most people don't get paid as much as you do. Therefore, of course, you should be putting your shoulder to the wheel to improve the general lot of the entire population. So there's a few reasons here. But then you get a message that says, why don't you pay more voluntarily, to which you are missing the entire point of tax. So if everybody moved heaven and earth to pay as little tax as possible, the Treasury would be in an even deeper hole than it is already. And if everybody avoided paying tax by demanding that those who recognise the importance and actually the beauty of taxation within a society, should do so voluntarily, then you miss the entire point of tax. 12 minutes after 12 is the time. So I want to get all that in place, right? I think there is something suboptimal about some of the people and reasons given for going to live, for being an immigrant in Dubai. Although, of course, we call them expats, if you're reading them in British newspapers that routinely attack immigrants. Some of these immigrants in Dubai have become refugees in the United Kingdom, where they have every right to be, but they are refugees because they are fleeing the dangers in Dubai, whither I think flights have now been called off until the summer, such is the precariousness of the situation. Some airlines, probably not all, I don't know. I get all that out there because I read this story and I didn't feel what I thought I'd feel. British expats fleeing the war in the Middle East have called on the government to urgently clarify whether they will face large tax bills on their return. This is national news. Admittedly, we're only talking about 160,000 people tops, of course, many of whom will not have left the region. But they have been warned that they could face an increased tax bill if their stay here goes beyond the 183 days that they're permitted to spend in the UK during a financial year. And, of course, the next one ends in April, so it ends at the end of next month. So people would have taken their allowance up to the wire, and most people presumably, and I'm tax exile, so I don't know, and I also love Britain. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I also love London because I live here, as opposed to getting my information from racists on social media who've never even visited. But I'm weird like that. I presume that you like to spend as much time here as you can if your work allows you to, but you keep a very close eye on that 183-day limit. So by the time you're getting towards end of February, middle of March, you've only got a relatively small number of days left, if any, because you've kept it quite tight. And then lo and behold, you can't get back to Dubai because the flights have been called off after drones damaged fuel depots at the airport. And you know that if you go over the 183 days, then you might become eligible for income tax in this country on your earnings. And I don't know if you witnessed me cracking out the world's tiniest violin a couple of weeks ago, but I did. I played it live on the radio. Spoiler alert, I didn't. I just made some strange noises and pretended it. And I can't do the high enough noise anymore. I used to be able to do a Morton Harkett impression when I was young. Can you believe that? I used to be able to hit the highest notes. Now I can't go any higher than this, really. Wait. That's about as high as I go. So when I was playing the world's tiniest violin, it was frankly embarrassing for all concerned. And I didn't. I mean, by the end of this conversation, I may well have reached for the world's tiniest violin, but I have some sympathy for people in this position because it's about, for me, it's about terms and conditions. It's about the fact that you have made certain sacrifices in terms of seeing your... You've prioritised not paying tax over things like family and patriotism and contributing to the public good. Should I sound like I'm having a go now? And I'm not. I'm just saying, I know that not everybody is like me. And it's the fact that it's war. This is the crucial point behind the question that I'm about to ask you. It's the fact that it's war. It's an entirely unforeseen circumstance. I got a friend trying to fly back from, I think it was Australia, via the Middle East, and insurers don't take war or their insurer didn't take war as a reason for refunds, because it's not an act of God, I think was the rationale that was given. It's not a natural disaster. I suppose if Donald Trump's in charge, you could only really describe it as an unnatural disaster. But if it's a war that has stopped me going back, it's not a matter of choice, then... Well, let me read you what a partner at a big accountancy firm says. When you are trying to move your family to safety, you are not focused on day count rules or technical residence tests. While HM Revenue and Customs has updated its guidance to acknowledge that the outbreak of war can qualify as an exceptional circumstance for residency purposes, the rules remain highly restrictive and are strictly limited in scope. Choosing to stay in the UK to be with family after the initial crisis has passed typically does not count as exceptional. So should people who are here to avoid the war in Dubai, where they have chosen to live, lose their exemptions from paying tax in this country if, as a consequence of avoiding the war, they exceed their 183-day limit for being in this country. And why am I not playing the world's tiniest violin? Jay's already been in touch. He said, here are my thoughts on this story. And he wrote, ha ha ha, ha 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 ha, ha 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 ha, ha 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 ha. And I thought I'd be like Jay. In fact, I think you thought I'd probably be like Jay as well. But at the moment, I'm not, because it's a war. And if you've made your calculations according to one set of circumstances, and that set of circumstances changes completely, entirely beyond your control, and you choose to prioritise your safety and your family's safety over your... Can I say greed, or do I lose the room if I say greed? No, over your arrangements, okay? Now, your arrangements might be born of greed, but it's not your greed that you're prioritising over safety. You are coming back to Britain for X days, and if those days exceed the 183 that you're allowed to be here, should the tax man give you a break and let you continue to enjoy exams? So just comment this honestly. I mean, laugh at me if you want. Tell me I'm an absolute idiot. I need to give my head the mother of all wobbles, and you won't be losing any sleep whatsoever worrying about these people who have abandoned their own country in pursuit of untaxed income and have come scurrying back at the first sign of trouble and have started bleating already about being required to pay for the privilege of living in this sceptred isle. But I don't quite feel it. Go on, give us a call. 0345 6060 973. Should people who are only in the UK because there is a war in Dubai be required to pay tax in the UK if they exceed their limit? Tell me why. Or, crucially, tell me why not. So I sense from my inbox that I haven't done a brilliant job of explaining my own position on this. I don't like this practice. And I don't like this tribe of influencers. But as Simon in Dover reminded us on Friday, there's loads of people living in Dubai who don't fit any of the cliches, except the tax avoidance. They don't fit any of the cliches that we like to apply to these people. Should they be entitled to avoid paying tax in this country, even if they end up spending more days here, as a direct consequence of the war and the dangers in Dubai? Your thoughts on this, please. 0345 6060 973. I'm comfortable with unanimity. If you all think I'm an idiot and I've taken leave of my senses, and you think I'm planning a secret trip to Dubai soon to relocate and launch a radio station, then I fully accept your criticism. Don't hold back on the grounds that everyone else will think I'm an idiot, so you don't need to point it out as well. But I think there might be something more interesting here. I just need a little bit of help from you in describing to me exactly what it is. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £23 million. Which means it's time to play the song. Again. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Go from bucket list to booked with EasyJet. Get package holidays from £319 per person and flights from £32 one way. So stop dreaming, stop scrolling, stop umming and ahhing. Book now at EasyJet.com and get your holiday sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates and flights April to September. Limited availability. Holidays after protected. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
And I think one bit missing from my slightly unexpected analysis of this story is that they're not all, these people aren't all like mega, mega loaded. There's plenty of people who have relocated to Dubai, often temporarily, who are working as doctors, teachers, speech and language therapists. No hostages, one of my favourite Blue Sky correspondents reminds me. They go after graduation, they work for a while, they try to save a deposit, they use Dubai as a hub for travelling, and then they return home. So their financial calculations, albeit that they're going to be much healthier than they would be if they were paying income tax in their home country, in this case the UK, their financial calculations have been quite carefully considered. And something like this would drive a coach and horses through their plans. So try not to think about some idiot influencer and think instead about a young teacher or a young professional who is not going to stay there forever, but who has done the calculations about getting on the property ladder and getting enough together for a deposit, and they were mobile and fluid enough to go there, and they've done all of their numbers, and then a war starts and they come back to Britain and realise that they're about to go over the 183-day limit, and that would involve them paying tax in this country, and that would completely destroy all of their financial planning in the short term and elements of it in the long term. I mean this, by the way. I'm just interested in what you think. James is in Camden. James, what do you reckon?
Normally, I'm pretty aggressively left-wing on this stuff, James.
Go on, then.
But
but this time, it's my money.
No, well, I'm not there. It's other people's money. But I know loads of people who have done this. Yeah. I've worked with a lot of people. Family members have done it. And I don't agree, but ultimately, I want everybody, regardless of income, to have the same treatment under the law. Therefore, if somebody is fleeing a war-torn country, even if they've been a horrible piece of work leaving the country in the first place, you've got to give them the exemption. And if we talk about influencers and all of these ridiculous people who are the edge cases,
yes, I think that's where I'm coming from, in that I don't want to let my natural, I hope, intelligence be polluted by extreme examples.
Exactly. It's the same as people arguing against refugees staying in the country because their child likes a certain kind of chicken nugget. It's a misrepresentation of what the majority of situations actually are.
I'd agree with that up to a point, but some things that are not misrepresentations include the fact that these people are trousering a hell of a lot more money than their counterparts in this country are, and their counterparts in this country are paying tax.
They absolutely are, but then we have to talk about other rules around expatriates. Like, a lot of the edge cases are big fans of Trump and the American system.
Yes.
But in the American system, you have to pay an awful lot of tax if you're leaving, which we don't actually have here, which is weird. And I suspect we would care less about it if that was in place.
Who are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about the way in which you have to pay.
No. When you find that your traditional left-wing leanings are strangely diluted, who specifically are you thinking about?
Possibly family members who left when they were younger, didn't have kids, and all of that sort of thing, made a load of money, eventually came back and minimised I'm thinking about
journalists, teachers, doctors, people who are earning way more than they would do in this country, but who are not, you know, trousering at home. They're not wheelbarrowing at home. And
exactly. I mean, I'm in rarefied air, so I'm thinking of people who would be making like between 40 and 70 in the UK, and they've gone over there and they're getting the take home from 120. 140, something like that. So
yes.
it's still people who are extraordinarily lucky, but as I say, the law has to apply regardless of your income.
But it does. I mean, to be fair, I could use that the other way around. The law is that if you go over 183 days, you pay tax here.
Yes.
So the law would apply. I mean, in some ways, you're arguing that they should get an exemption from the rule that applies to everybody else. If you and I stay in the country for more than 183 days, we become immediately responsible for paying tax. And if they do, if the law was to treat everybody equal, I think I've done you here, mate. Haven't I?
But we are talking about an exemption for extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, and up to a point, that works, but exceptional circumstances will be taken into account, HMRC say. But if you're staying here because it's the trade-off, isn't it? Is that one of the reasons why you get to live this life in Dubai is because it is in the Middle East, and the Middle East is a notoriously volatile area. So you takes your money, you takes your chances. No,
to a certain degree, yes. But
what?
Like, they are very exceptional circumstances.
Yeah. So this is. So I disagree with you about that equality.
It's not a case of like, oh, I've
I've got to stay over here because I need to go to a wedding or I've got a family commitment.
No,
or
this is
like
where
that.
This is where my thoughts started actually, and then they went to the fact that I don't want my opinion to be coloured by the unpleasant types that we see on Louis Theroux's new documentary or Lee Anderson's wife who lives out there. The reality is, normal people, the people I know who have gone there for a variety of reasons, including the difficulties of getting ahead in your 20s in this country compared to what it was like when I was in my 20s, and then being compelled to stay here beyond the 183-day limit, would drive a coach and horses through some of the things. And some of them, I know one person who would rather not be there, but who is sort of sucking it up in the short term in order to come back to Britain in the long term in a healthier financial position, at which point they will become, you know, fully fledged taxpayer. I just think it might be a little bit more nuanced than the world's tiniest violin brigade allow. And James in Camden, the first caller, I'd be very surprised if he stays on the winning side, but at the moment it's 1-0 to the Dubai immigrants. Steve's in Nottingham. Steve, what do you reckon?
Hey James, I guess that sort of thrown me a little bit now, because I came on all out to say, well, I think if you're going to Dubai in the first place, you're going to be in a position where wealth is on your side, or you're optimistic in that sense, in that you know what you're going to try and achieve while you're there. But then when you put it into perspective of, you know, we're looking at, you know, people trying to get ahead, just trying to get established in life, then I guess, is there a take there where?
I don't know. I'm just mooting the possibility that there might be.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think that there is the element of, well, if you're coming back to this country and you've benefited from tax exemptions in a different country, then you should pay when you're returning back to the country. It's simple as that. We are all paying while we're in this country already, so I don't see why there should be an exemption there. But then I think when you start to put a different spin on
I'm doing 2 years there. I'm doing 3 years there. And if I do that and I get my head down and I miss my mum and all my mates, and there's elements of the life here that are awful. It's not exactly a cultural oasis. And I do like things like theatre and what have you. But I do 3 years there. Then I'll have enough for a deposit. I'll come back to Nottingham and I'll buy a flat, and then I'll go, but get a, you know, I'll go back to a job that is taxed at PAYE, all of the above. And then this happens, and I get hit by this 183-day rule, and I'm going to have to do another 2 years there. Is that fair?
Exactly, no. And you give up that right as soon as you go out there, right? In the sense of, you know what this national security is, you know what the risks are, you're moving to the Middle East, this could happen. It's reality, and you've already benefited by being there, right? So it doesn't matter whether you're there a week or a month or a year, you've benefited financially.
Yeah.
From being there. So why is that unfair to say, well, you know, if you come back, well, yeah, you should pay a little bit extra for coming back.
Yeah, well, you're a score draw, aren't you? You're a walking, talking score draw, Steve. I think that's what I might be. And of course, you can't really have one rule for them and another rule for the other. So you can't say, oh, here's someone nice who's only doing it to get the deposit for a flat together, and here is some absolute hideous influencer. They should have all their taxes taken from them the minute they get off the aeroplane at Heathrow. You said that, and that brings us back to James in Camden's comments about everybody being equal under the law. I quite like this. I'm not entirely sure. Apparently, I've made a terrible mistake. Ah, dear, because I think I made this mistake on Friday as well. It shows that I should pay more attention to these matters. Have you spotted the terrible mistake that I've made in the course of the last 5 minutes? It's a biggie. I'll correct it after the headlines with Amelia Cox.
Israel's defence minister says its military has killed Iran's security chief Ali Larijani in a strike. He was last seen in public at a Quds Day march in Tehran on Friday, but Iran has not confirmed his death. The Archbishop of Canterbury has described the deaths of two young people in a meningitis outbreak as a devastating loss. Hundreds of people in Kent are being invited to claim preventative antibiotics to stop the spread. And Unite has been fined £265,000 for blocking rubbish collections during the Birmingham bin strikes. The union had previously agreed not to stop vehicles at depots or on city streets. LBC weather, sunny spells across much of England and Wales this afternoon, cloudier in Scotland and Northern Ireland with rain in western and northwestern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to Bet Victor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the Bet Victor Predictor, and in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Have you got a pendulum? I have a pendulum, and it swings, sometimes quite freely. And my favourite subjects historically are what we like to call pendulum subjects. So you can start at 12 o'clock or 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock thinking one thing and then we get stuck into it. You heard it with the last caller, actually. It was literally while he was on hold, he felt his mind beginning to change or, if you prefer, his pendulum beginning to swing. So mine swung back again now because quite a lot of you have pointed out that the teachers and the journalists and the speech therapists and the like are not going to be permitted to take 6 months a year off from their jobs in Dubai. So who exactly is capable of living as an immigrant, as an economic immigrant in Dubai, and coming back to Britain often enough to push their allowance close to the 183-day limit? And the answer is probably, I don't know, it's probably going to be the wealthy, isn't it? The more wealthy. But I still find the question a little bit more interesting than I thought I would. If you're just joining us, it is a question of expats or immigrants, as we'd call them if they weren't British, fleeing the war in the Middle East, calling on the government here to clarify whether they'll have to pay tax bills, large tax bills potentially on their return, because they would, having exceeded the 183-day limit, they would become eligible to pay tax on all of their income in this country, which at the moment they don't pay at all. Because they are based, for example, in Dubai, where you can't get back to at this precise moment in time because a drone damaged a fuel depot at the airport yesterday. I just like the nuance of it, but I have to tell you, Lee Anderson, 30p Lee, do you remember him? It's not his wife that lives in Dubai. It's and apparently they're not even married. It's Richard Tice's girlfriend who lives in Dubai. So my apologies to all concerned. I don't know who I should be apologising to more. On that, for suggesting that that 30p Lee was married to what's the chops, Isabel Oakeshott, and not engaged to Richard Tice. Of those three people, who is more deserving of my apology for my misunderstanding of their domestic arrangements? Who would be most offended? It's almost a phone in that, wouldn't it? Who would be most offended by that suggestion or by that misapprehension on my part? Anyway, my apologies to all concerned, but I don't know in which order those apologies would be offered. I mean, God forbid I'm feeling sorrier for 30p Lee than I would be for Oakeshott or Tice. But anyway, I got that wrong. There's a show full of mistakes today, and many of you think that this approach to this particular story is the biggest mistake of them all. Well, bring it. Tommy's in Durham. Tommy, what do you reckon?
Hi, good afternoon, James.
Hello, Tom.
Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
So just to put in a little background in there for you, James, is I was in the armed forces for 25 years, and when I retired in 2011, I went out as an armed security guard on the oil tankers through the streets of Hormuz, Bab el-Mandeb Straits, Gulf of Aden. But that was about protecting the ships from the Somali piracy.
Yeah,
now, when we did that, we were the same 183 days out of the UK, or we paid tax on return, and it was quite a well-paid job, I would say.
Yeah.
So we when we got our month off after every 3 months away, we wouldn't go home, we'd go to Thailand or somewhere else to waste our holidays to stop us coming back and adding up the 183 days.
Oh, really?
So if, I understand these families need to get be safe from Dubai or wherever else, and they can go back to UK, but I would expect them to pay tax. Because they don't have to come to the UK, they can go to Spain, they can go to Tenerife, they can go somewhere else for the month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever it is.
So you've got no sympathy for this argument at all? Oh, well, that's not fair, because you're not a cruel, man. Well, all right, you said none whatsoever. But you mean the it's a trade-off, and the you know, cry me a river, effectively, for the people who've been caught in the horns of this particular dilemma. What if there'd been a war, though? Because you weren't there. Obviously, it's a little odd having this conversation with someone who's ex-army. But you weren't actually there during a war, because you'd already left, and even if you were, you'd already left the army, and you were providing armed security on oil tankers, which I would like to talk to you about a little bit more. But before we do that, what if the war is the reason why? Does that not change it? Is it not such an unexpected circumstance, such an unforeseeable event, that it does put a slightly different complexion on things?
It does, but we're talking about, okay, I agree they should be safe, and they should leave the war zone to be safe, but crying about having to pay tax because of the 183 days, you know, that was normal to us because we were out of the country so long. I mean, if we came back to see our family or friends, we would have to pay tax.
So they could go somewhere else for a while. Let me read you one more. I'll have one more go at you. Okay, ready? I worked in the Middle East for 8 years, two in Dubai. There's a massive misconception about people living and working there. As soon as you say you're working in Dubai, people have an automatic reaction that you earn a ridiculous amount of money. The fact of the matter is that there's lots of things that are relevant. Salary was good compared to the same job in the UK, but what you actually have as disposable income is not that much more because, for example, rent is roughly three times what I'd have been paying for the same property in the UK, and 90% of the UK expats out there are normal people. Well, you and Richard helpfully adds, P.S. Biden and Roy are still alive. So he, like you, is a normal person, and unlike him, you still think that the rules are the rules, and just because a war has started doesn't mean that you should get to rewrite them.
Yeah, we're all getting paid different salaries. So, for example, I know it wasn't a war zone, but when I started protecting the tankers from the piracy, our salary was very good, and that was, you know, it was really a lot more than I'd get in the UK.
Yeah.
But as time went on, and the warships started to appear to protect the shipping lanes, the piracy dropped off. In which case, so did the salary levels. So we had to either find another job, because it was similar to a normal job in the UK, if I can say normal.
I do understand. So there's all sorts of variables in place, and we all have to roll with them. And just because you've relocated to Dubai doesn't mean you get a free pass on some of the variables that have come back to bite you on the bum. And of course, the other thing is that when we pay our taxes in this country, we're paying, among many other things, for the government to keep us safe.
Yes, and we also had to, James, we also were advised to get in touch with an accountant who will deal with it, who's an offshore, away from home professional. So we used to use a company in Norway who specialised in oil rigs and workers that worked away from home.
Because you have
and
such a strange...
They would make sure that HMRC weren't on your case until you hit the 183 days.
Yeah.
So they managed it better.
My pendulum is doing a weird sort of spiralling type movement now, Tommy. I was swinging, and then it was swinging back, and now it's sort of doing a strange sort of figure of eight type of thing going on. When you were doing the security for the ships that were under threat from Somalian pirates, did you ever encounter any pirates?
Yeah, quite often, James.
Really?
Quite often. So in the years from 2011 to 17, I would probably say well over a dozen times we had to protect the vessel with weapons.
What do you do? Just shoot over their heads, fire across the bows?
No, well, there was maritime laws we had to follow, James, so there's warning shots. They would get the captain to alter course and increase speed. There was fire hoses, there's warnings. And then we'd fire into the waters, warning shots. We'd fire at the engine block if it was good enough for any of the guys. And then lethal force was your last option.
Good Lord.
And that was because they had RPGs put into their shoulders or whatever, then you had to do it.
It's pretty scary.
Well, well. It was
well,
okay.
Not to you.
It was a good salary.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Wow.
But, well, but again, about the tax, we knew that we had to stay at the country or pay tax on return.
And that's the deal?
That's the deal, correct.
Love it. I'm okay. I'm on a pretty sticky wicket on this, or thin ice, or whatever figure of speech you prefer. It is 12:42. James has been in touch. So I just caught the end of your last segment, James. Did you say that 30p Lee has just got engaged to Richard Tice? Oh, well, congratulations to all concerned. Paul's in Amersham. Paul, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello.
Yeah, nice to speak to you.
We'll see.
I just come back on Saturday night from Dubai, visiting my son out there with he's got a 3-month baby with his wife. So it's been quite a difficult time, really.
Yes, of course it has.
And just so in mentioning the reason whether they should have some kind of leeway on the tax situation, I guess you can't really change the rules for everyone, and then make everyone else sort of abide by them. So I'd probably be inclined to say maybe that's a step too far.
Do you want him to come back?
Well, he's actually going to... They're leaving.
Anyway.
On Thursday. Well, they're not coming back to England. Right. His wife, Julia, is Italian.
Okay.
So they're going to go and stay with their parents there for a month. Or even 2 weeks, I think, then he's got to go back and work.
Right.
So, difficult. She's got time off work because
it's a tricky time for everybody. And I don't imagine he's in a position, unless something really weird happens, he's not going to be close to using up his 183 days anytime soon, is he, in this country?
No, because they've been out there for nearly 3 years.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And they haven't come back, so they've only came back... Well, actually, they came back for 2 weeks, the beginning of May, I think it was. Oh, no, not May, what I'm talking about. August sometime last year, so...
I like the wrestling that you're doing with your sort of personal love and loyalty and affection, but also the slightly overarching sense that if they were on the cusp of this limit, then it shouldn't really give them an exemption from having the same relationship with the taxman that everybody else who's spent over 183 days in this country in a single tax year would have.
I sort of agree with you on that, really. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I kind of think...
You can't agree with me, mate. I'm changing my mind every 10 seconds at the moment.
Oh, have you changed? I don't know. It was 1-1 the last time I listened in. just overall, I mean, there's a few teachers who've just gone back. They're going back again. They've just come back. A lot of people left quite quickly and paid a lot of money to get out of there.
Did they? They're refugees.
Friends of theirs.
They become refugees, although I don't think they're having their jewellery confiscated at the airport, as was mooted for other refugees relatively recently. Also, I mean, if I were feeling mischievous, and I know, Paul, you'd be in on this, that's not a serious observation, but aren't they supposed to stop in the first country that they pass through as well? Isn't that normally how it works? Thank you, Paul. It's a lovely contribution. Thoughtful. It'll never catch on. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
As oil supplies dwindle, should Keir Starmer ease Russian sanctions and negotiate with Iran over shipping access to Hormuz? And an expert answers all your questions on meningitis.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
A Southern Train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields, or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £23 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:48 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I did have a missing word round for you, and it's actually one of my all-time favourites, but I've left it a little bit late in the game, and having said that, I've probably lost it. So I just thought I'd keep you in the loop, you know, no particular reason. I like this. Monet, as in the artist, right, was so poor that he had to beg blank for money. See if you can guess what that is. Monet was so poor that he had to beg blank for money. Now, everybody at LBC is very excited by Riley's Reform Roundup. Nobody more so than George Icke, our reporter in the Midlands. And he has, as a consequence of this, conducted an interview with George Finch. It's a festival of Georges, who is the council leader facing a vote of no confidence that Henry has been bringing us up to speed with now for the best part of a fortnight. George, how did you get on?
Well, James, the interview was last week looking ahead at the vote of no confidence this week. And to say it was wide-ranging and we ended up on a vast number of topics would be something of an understatement, perhaps. We ended up talking about flags flying over public buildings, Black History Month, school transport, highways, all manner of different things. And you actually join me here at Shire Hall just as that vote has concluded. Councillor George Finch has survived the vote of no confidence. 26 people vote, councillors voting for the motion to remove him as leader of the council. Gosh. 27 voting against it and 2 abstaining.
Absolute nail biter.
Cinema in action here in Warwickshire, James.
Well, I admire your calmness in the face of such exciting events, George. Tell us a little more about the... I'll tell you what, mate, with your permission, you mentioned flags and Black History Month. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's in favour of the first one and against the second one.
Yeah, quite an interesting exchange about the flags. That was one of the reasons that this vote was actually brought by the Green Party. They said quite public row with the chief executive of the council had brought the authority into disrepute when he said he wanted to ban the Pride flag and the Ukraine flag from being flown over the building. And the chief exec said, no, that wasn't the policy. So he drafted his own policy that essentially allowed that to happen. And I asked him a little bit about that in the interview, and I think we can hear a bit of that now.
I'm here to make difficult decisions, and if that means that we're going to get a protest outside because I took the Progress Pride flag down, so be it. But the only three flags that should fly from a county building, a government building, are the Union flag, the St George's flag and the county flag, because they represent everybody. I don't care if you're gay, bisexual, black, Chinese, whatever. I'm not bothered about any of that. As long as you're a good person and you've got integrity, honesty, that's all I ask. I don't care if you want to be somewhere else.
But then why do the flags bother you? Because that was one of the things in this no confidence vote that was raised as one of their examples of where you've brought the administration into disrepute, was this disagreement with the chief exec over the flags. What, if you don't care, Why do you care, if that makes sense?
Because it's a government building. It is owned by, in effect, the people. So we will listen to what the majority of them say. And the majority of the public in Warwickshire are represented by the Union flag, the St George's flag and the county flag. Put them up. It's the county council building. This should, we should not show preference to any group.
And that conversation, James, ended up bringing us on to Black History Month, and where George was explaining to me that we shouldn't show preference at different times of year, and that history is history and we should listen to it at all times.
We'll get that in a second. Just before that, I just, for the benefit of people listening, this is George Finch, the council leader in Warwickshire, insisting that he doesn't care about anybody's identity. He only cares about integrity and decency. Just remind us who the leader of Reform UK is, would you, George?
Nigel Farage.
Well, that's the fella. Anyway, let's hear what he had to say about Black History Month.
Yeah, in my eyes, we shouldn't be celebrating Black History Month.
We shouldn't be, was that?
No.
Why not?
Because history is history.
Okay.
Black history should be every day. So should Jewish history. White history is history.
But I suppose there is a background to that in that they were persecuted.
Bad things happen in history. It's history for a reason. I don't just watch Nelson Mandela films in November, because it's Black History Month. I watch them wherever, because he's inspirational. You don't just go, oh, I'm just going to watch him on that day because it's the... No. History is history. It's turning it political. History, Henry VIII chopped people's heads off. We don't look at that now and go, oh, no, that's... Yeah, we should fine the Tudors for doing that. It's history. It's what happened. We learned from our mistakes. People back then thought differently. You know, they thought witches existed, for God's sake. They thought differently. As long as we can learn from those mistakes, fine. But we don't need certain months to identify the good things black people have done in our history. That should be every day. That should be taught in our history lessons, not separate days. I think it's not fair. The more you talk about it, the issue you create. If your history is history... No one's discriminated. No one feels left out. Because there's always key figures in history that are different. That's what makes it history.
Ah. You're a lot younger than me, George. I don't know if you ever saw The Office, did you?
I haven't. I have been encouraged to watch it, James. This would be an opportune moment to pick it up.
I don't know why it just popped into my mind, but I couldn't recommend it highly enough. What do we know about Councillor Finch? He's very young, isn't he? Did he go to school?
He did. So Councillor Finch is 19, and actually it was a crossover of LBC's youngest reporter, which is myself, meeting up with the UK's youngest council leader here at Shire Hall to have this conversation. And he essentially was telling me in that interview that he feels the reason that he's been in this position and ended up with a vote of no confidence is because he's too charismatic. And at times it was sort of trying to keep him on the track of what the question was.
He's too charismatic.
Indeed.
Okay. Have we got that on
tape?
That
was a touch charismatic, James. Can you calm down?
I mean, that is... Let's just have a little snatch, if we may, Keith, of the bloke who's too charismatic for his... I mean, it's a bit like that. Oh, you can't talk about Right Said Fred anymore, can you? Because they went weird as well. But anyway, he's too charismatic for his shirt.
I'm here to make difficult decisions. And if that means that we're going to get a protest outside because I took the Progress Pride flag down, so be it. But the only three flags that should fly from a county building, a government building, are the Union flag, the St George's flag, and the county flag.
I prefer
the
bit about history. Because history's history.
Everybody. I don't care. You know, in my eyes, we shouldn't be celebrating Black History Month.
We shouldn't be, was that?
No.
Why not?
Because history is history.
Okay.
Black history should be every day. So should Jewish history. White history is history.
But I suppose there is a background to that in that they were persecuted.
Bad things happen in history. It's history for a reason. I don't just watch now.
I mean, he has a point, George. Bad things do happen in history. It is history for a reason. So you spent an hour with him?
I did, and then we've been in the meeting for 2 hours this morning until that vote came in, and there's been a number of comments made, one about Tory councillors being referred to using the poo emoji, another one where it's reported he posted a picture of a Tory councillor mocked up as a burglar. And then
charisma.
We had a series of comments from other Reform councillors saying he's in the papers more than Katie Price, and Bradley Walsh's agent wants to know how he's getting more airtime than Bradley Walsh.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a busy morning here in Warwickshire, James.
But he's away. He's out of trouble. I mean, he's still got a ticking off for potentially interfering with a court case, but it has not convinced his colleagues in Reform UK that that is grounds for removing him from the role.
I put that to him, and he said that that wasn't a problem because he was acting in the interests of his residents in Warwickshire.
Okay, that was, and just on a scale of 1 to 10, how charismatic was he being when he said that?
There was a lot of gestures, which obviously don't work so well for radio.
Well, you say that. George, great stuff. I'm trying to work out what that ratio is. What was it, 27 to 26 with two abstentions?
So 426 against 27 and two abstains.
It better not be 52-48, that. It's 51.9, is it? I think it is.
I'm going to have to rely on your maths, James. It's not my strong point.
None of us should be relying on my maths, George. Thank you very much indeed. Great stuff. And there it is. I mean, we often talk about charisma in the context of politics, but rarely have we come across a politician so convinced of his own charismatic status that he decided to do... What is he, like a David Brent tribute act? Is that fair? I was thinking David Brent. A couple of you were thinking Gareth. But I felt David Brent on that one. Great work by George Ike. And that is exactly the kind of politician we can look forward to seeing a lot more of. Should Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform UK, and you heard the young man there saying all he cares about is integrity and honesty, should he continue on his current upward trajectory? That's it from me for today. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back. I think you can see George's interview with George in full as well at lbc.co.uk. Listen back on the Global Player or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Huge range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, best bits from my show every day, and of course the Full Disclosure interview series. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now, with a massive happy St. Patrick's Day from me, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks, James. At 3 today, an expert is here to answer all your questions on meningitis as Wes Streeting gives an update on the Kent outbreak. At 2, former UK ambassador to Washington says Donald Trump is isolated and vulnerable 3 weeks into his war on Iran. Is that a good thing or a bad thing from our perspective? And to protect oil supplies, should Keir Starmer ease Russian sanctions and negotiate with Iran over shipping access to Hormuz?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Israeli government says it has killed Iran's security chief, who has not been seen since last week. Tehran is yet to confirm the death of Ali Larijani, who attended a Quds Day march on Friday. The announcement follows the latest round of US and Israeli strikes in the Middle East overnight. Israel's foreign minister Gideon Saar claims Iran wants to destroy the West.
Since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, it has exported extremism, terror, and bloodshed in the Middle East and beyond. Iran has built up a proxy network of terror states across the region. Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, and the Houthis in Yemen.
Two more cases of meningitis have been confirmed following an outbreak in Kent. It brings the total to 15 after two people died, including a university student and sixth form pupil in Faversham. Health Secretary Wes Streeting has been updating the Commons this afternoon.
Contact tracing of these individuals began immediately and continued into Sunday morning, March the 15th. All those traced were offered precautionary antibiotics. So far, 700 doses have been administered.
All in-person exams at the University of Kent have been cancelled, while a nightclub linked to the outbreak is closed. Warwickshire County Council's 19-year-old leader has survived a vote of no confidence by a margin of just one. Reform UK's George Finch was accused of bringing the authority into disrepute. The motion was brought by the Green Party. Volodymyr Zelensky will meet the Prime Minister in London later. The visit will see Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal to manufacture and supply new drones. Ivana Stradna from the Foundation for the Defence of Democracies has told LBC it's an important visit.
This is a really step in the right direction because what's happening right now with Iran, a lot of people in the West are worried that we are going to forget about Ukraine. And this is a step in the right direction to send a clear signal to Ukraine, but also to Vladimir Putin, that Europe is not going to fall for that trick.
The Unite Union has been fined £265,000 for blocking council rubbish collections during the Birmingham bin strikes. It had previously agreed to a High Court injunction at depots or on city streets. Unite admitted breaching the order and apologised unreservedly. And Glasgow Central Railway Station will partially reopen tomorrow after a fire destroyed a neighbouring building. It was forced to close on the 8th of March after it broke out at the Union Corner building. LBC's Alan Zazinski is outside the station.
We are told the station itself will still look different. Parts of it nearest to the usual entrance will be sealed off. Shops are going to be shut. There's going to be barriers and signage up as well. But, as I say, welcome news that after 10 days, finally trains are going to be running again.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 83 points at 10,400. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells across much of England and Wales this afternoon. Cloudier in Scotland and Northern Ireland with rain in western and northwestern areas. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Imagine a world where there is no cardiovascular disease. A future where everyone gets to spend more time with the people they love. Where the signs are spotted before it's too late. British Heart Foundation is funding research using AI that could help predict heart attacks. But our work is not done. Leave a gift in your will to help fund life-saving research and keep us beating. Find out more at bhf.org.uk/wills.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We have a busy afternoon ahead. We have the Prime Minister meeting President Zelensky of Ukraine a little later. Maybe they can compare insults from President Trump. The NATO chief, Mark Rutte, joins them too. But my big question for you this hour is, where does Russian oil fit into all of the discussions being had at the moment around Iran and around Ukraine and its future too? If we in the UK aren't joining the US offensive, and it certainly looks that way for now, what should the Prime Minister do to secure our oil supplies long term? Should he be making deals with Iran around the Strait of Hormuz? Should he consider lifting sanctions, to some degree at least, on Russian oil? What say you? 0345 6060973. I spoke yesterday with Professor Nick Butler, Chair of the King's Policy Institute at King's College in London, former Vice President for Policy and Strategy at BP, knows a thing or two about oil, and former Senior Policy Advisor at Number 10. He said that the only country in the world that can substantially replace disrupted oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz is Russia.
I think even if we do send minesweepers and clear the Gulf, which I believe we should, because it's in a national interest, I think we're still going to have a period which has already begun when tankers can't get through, and therefore a fifth of the world's supply of oil is going to be taken off the market. And it's very hard to replace that. The only country in the world that can substantially replace part of that is Russia. And I don't think we're going to give up on sanctions on Russia just yet. I think we have to realize that if this conflict goes on and if Hormuz remains closed, there is going to be a substantial physical shortage here. And that goes well beyond heating oil. It goes to everybody's use of oil and gas.
Whether that's in the home, in your car, other forms of transport.
And that's right. And in factories, in food supply, in hospitals, all those things depend on oil and gas. Now, Mr. Starmer talks about the long-term energy policy changes towards renewables, and that's fine, but the key word in that is long-term. It takes a long time. Oil and gas is still 80% of our daily energy consumption. And that is not going to change quickly because it's embedded in all the things that we use in our houses, in our factories, in our cars. That can't be changed overnight.
You suggested that rationing could be needed. How soon do you think rationing could be needed, even if the situation were to stay as it is now, and it is just as likely, I suppose, to worsen?
I think it is likely to worsen because every day means that normal supply is not getting through.
Dwindling, yeah.
I think the government, to avoid the risks of panic buying, which wouldn't help anybody, should now lay out a clear plan for what they're going to do. I think they have to protect the key sectors, the health service, food supply.
School,
when we had a
schools.
Tanker drivers dispute in the year 2000, those were the really vulnerable points. Mm. And I think the government has to take control of those supplies. And then it has to work out how it's going to handle the rest of the supply system. And that is where I think rationing begins, by protecting the supplies to the key areas. But everybody else, you can't just leave it to queues at the petrol stations. But I think the danger now is if we go week by week and this continues, people will start to really worry and to panic buy, and that would be even worse. We could be facing a recession if this goes wrong. Energy costs are a very important part of the economy. The economic growth is not very strong anyway, and this would jolt it downwards. And so that's the risk. And because it's a worldwide crisis, it's not particularly about the UK. We are just a victim because we're an importer.
That was Professor Nick Butler, Chair of the King's Policy Institute at King's College, London. Ben Judah joins me, former advisor to David Lammy. Good afternoon to you, Ben. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me on.
Isn't the truth somewhere in the middle here? We know that Russia is the largest crude oil supplier to countries like India, China, Turkey, and we import a lot from certainly India and China, don't we? I mean, are we getting around our own sanctions anyway? So should we just come clean and do it a bit more openly?
I think the most important thing to remember about the reason Russia sanctions exist is that every dollar or ruble Russia makes